Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
Great card coming up this weekend, as always, with Fight Night Picks, one half your hosting duo, at Craig Allen FNP. You can find me there on Twitter and Instagram, Matt, as always, at Matt Allen FNP. And Matt, with Fight Night Picks, we're not just excited about this card, but we're really excited about the direction of the channel. We're bringing back This Week in MMA. Was it the second reboot? No, this is the third reboot.
I was just saying, you guys have heard this before.
But we're bringing back This Week in MMA. And with that, the addition of more fighter interviews to the channel and the newest addition to Fight Night Picks, Johnny Hyun Ko. He goes from being friend of the show to now member of the show. So we have JHK MMA. He's going to be joining us with all sorts of great content and fighter interviews. You can find those littered on this channel as we move forward. But Matt, having said that, we have a big card at hand this weekend to set us up for next week's card. Of course, you have UFC 260, but a really, really busy spring of MMA. And the slate that we have in front of us, all sorts of great fights on there.
Oh, 100%. We've really been spoiled so far this year with the amount of fights that we've had. I mean, we're getting another pay-per-view next week. That's, what, three this year already, which is wild. Just keep on getting pay-per-view after pay-per-view. Kevin Holland's back, though. One of the biggest rising stars of last year. Let's be honest. He's everything you want Khamzat Chimaev to be. That's what Kevin Holland is. He fought pretty much every other weekend, it seemed, every single month in 2020. And now he's getting his chance against Derek Brunson. Yeah, he beat Jacare. That's his first kind of step up competition. But Derek Brunson, he hates being called this, but it is what it is. He's a gatekeeper, but he's the best version of it, where if you can beat Derek Brunson, only good things are going to happen for the rest of your career. Going to be made eventing shows and fighting for titles. But Derek Brunson is not an easy fighter to get past. So I'm really excited for this weekend's main event.
Big time co-main event with Gregor Gillespie taking on Brad Riddell at 155 pounds. Matt, let's shift it on over to our fight of the night screen, as always presented by Manscaped. We're talking fight of the night on this card, of course, headlined by Kevin Holland taking on Derek Brunson. A lot of different fights that you could pick. You have a lot of UFC debuts, and unfortunately, as we were about to record this, we lost one of our fights. We had UFC 2, 3, and 4 veteran Johnny Eduardo backing out of his fight with Anthony Burchak. So, of course, when fights are announced and Burchak's supposed to stay on this card, they're going to find him a late replacement. We'll have a video come out on its own. But Max Payne Griffin, is going to be taking on the assassin Sung Kinnon. And that's a really exciting fight. I mean, for Sung Kinnon, he's taking on a who's who of strikers. Brad Riddell, who's at the co-main event. Those two guys fought at welterweight a number of years ago. He also faced Israel Adesanya on the regional scene. Sung Kinnon, great striker. Not the best defensive wrestler. Max Griffin, exciting striker. A little bit better wrestling. But this definitely has all of the makings to be a possible fight of the night, because these guys both go all out.
Oh, two guys who only give it 100%, pretty much from the second the bell begins till the end of the fight. And that's what you love about Max Griffin. He's been in there with some of the best, and has he always beaten them? No, he hasn't. But it's always made him a better fighter because of that. He is a guy who's gotten better between every single fight. And Sung Kinnon, one of the crazier come-ups in MMA, really. Crazy good striker, really accurate. But like you said, when you look at some of the guys that he fought, Israel Adesanya, Brad Riddell, two guys in City Kickboxing on the way up. Again, he's another guy. He's fought some really good guys in the division. He hasn't always beat them, but he always looks good. And again, two really accurate strikers on the feet. It's going to make for a phenomenal fight.
Really looking forward to that fight. We'll flip it on over. For our second possible fight of the night, this is where it gets a little awkward, because the boys interviewed Adrian Yanez back in December, had a good chat. Make sure you check it out on a great episode of This Week in MMA with Canadian country music legend Tay-Bay. But the point of it is, we talked to Adrian Yanez, bit of a candid conversation. Our pal and member of FightNightPicks.com, Joshua Hart, just had a great piece drop with Gustavo Lopez over on the site. So you can check that out again, FightNightPicks.com, which really a lot of people just don't know about it. But these guys are going to come together for a possible fight of the night, because they call Adrian Yanez a small version of Jorge Masvidal. I don't have any great comps for Gustavo Lopez, but both of these guys go balls to the wall. Lopez with his wrestling and his striking. Yanez, mainly known as a striker. If you want a great Yanez fight, And it's unfortunate, but go back and watch the split decision loss to Miles Johns. I think that could play a lot in a fight like this against Gustavo Lopez, but I love this matchup.
This is a really, really fun fight. And again, it's not like we're trying to be biased by using Yanez in this fight, or even Gustavo Lopez, I guess. They both have the FNP connection, but Yanez is a very exciting prospect. And I know I said Jonathan Martinez is going to go on, do great things, and become like champ, and I said some crazy things about that man. But Adrian Yanez is the real deal. He's got the hand speed. He's got all the skills. And what you do like about Yanez is his striking's so good, and he based the rest of his game around that. His takedown defense is phenomenal. His ground game, mainly just to get back up to his feet. He knows what he's good at, and that's really important for a prospect to know. But Gustavo Lopez is the type of guy who can halt any momentum a prospect has, which is going to be a really fun fight.
Really looking forward to this one. Two great possible fight of the night. You got Griffin Sankanon. You also have Adrian Yanez and Gustavo Lopez. Loving this card. Listen, it's a great card, and in the co-main event, Brad Riddell is going to be taking on the best fisherman in MMA. But I got something to say to the best fisherman in MMA. I'm fishing for deals at FightNightPicks.com. Make sure you check out the shop.
It's a nice one.
Use the promo code FNP25. You're going to save 25% off your order from now until Saturday. The great Under Armour hats. They have the maple leaf on the back. I'll throw the fishing rod away. You're getting ready for spring training. Baseball jerseys. Wow. You can get the long sleeve shirt like I have, or the MLG gaming shirt like Matt has in front of him. No, you can't get Matt's sweater. Damn. Maybe he'll sign some of the merch. I don't know, but like what? I said, FightNightPicks.com over on the shop, FNP25, you're going to save 25% off your order as we weave through a busy week of fights. Of course, you get that main event, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. In the co-main event, Gregor Gillespie, he's the gift taking on Brad Quake Riddell. Matt, I love this card. So without further ado, as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. Really interesting fight at flyweight. We have the UFC debut of, well, the first Baze on this card. We have JP Baze making his debut at 24 years of age. Now, listen, he had the opportunity to punch his ticket to the UFC when he was 21 back in 2017. He took on Joby Sanchez over on Contender Series, and he was unable to get the win. He was actually finished in that fight, but since then, he's been able to rack up three straight wins split between EFC and Brave and LFA and the Contender Series. He's been around the block, but listen, for South Africa's own JP Baze, this guy can get it done in a lot of different ways, but you know and love the wrestling and the top pressure, especially from him. Plenty finishes, and that's the thing that you like. I mean, his last win, guillotine choke, referee stoppage, ground and pound finishes, mounted guillotine choke. When he fought Gamzat Magomedov, a little bit of a DQ, wasn't supposed to elbow him when he was down. It is what it is, but he ends up picking up a win where he was in a bit of a compromised position. All in all, this is a guy that really embodies that Fortis MMA spirit. You always see him moving forward, taking great instruction out of the head coach, Saif Saud. They do great work over there. And JP has a very, very good chance to really move forward with his career. And unfortunately for Bruno Silva, well, he's been that stepping stone in three straight fights. He came in at UFC 243, one of the biggest opportunities you could ever have in front of the packed Marvel Stadium. It was Whitaker, and it was Adesanya. And listen, we saw a couple of different fighters make huge impacts. I mean, Jorgen De Castro was on that card, knocked the lights out of Justin Taffa.
He's a big star now.
And people are still talking about Jorgen. So, for Bruno Silva, he took on Khaled Taha, and in that fight, he ended up getting finished. But Taha ended up popping for the old USADA issues, I'll say. He ended up popping. So, overturned to a no contest. Bruno Silva goes out his next two fights. Loses against David Dvorak. And I'll come back to that one because he lost, but he was able to win a round or so. And then in the fight against Tagir Ulanbekov, we saw Bruno Silva have success in certain areas. It was probably a closer fight than a big Tagir fan would want. And that's the thing. Tagir was a huge favorite in that fight. The other thing for Bruno Silva, great wrestler, and he really embodies like the Fight Ready and Pitbull Brothers kind of spirit in his own right, because he's crafty, he kind of looks like a little bit of a Cejudo, the way that he kind of moves around in the octagon, he'll kind of punch forward, almost like a Patricio Pitbull will, but his skills aren't totally up to snuff. So we'll see what happens for him in this fight. But I think stylistically, and as far as we're talking about ceilings and caps, these guys are pretty close. It's a good job of matchmaking.
I'm here to tell you, Bruno Silva is not a combination of Henry Cejudo and either Pitbull brother. He is a fun fighter, though, and this is one of those dangerous fights to predict, because everything tells you that JP Baez should win this fight. It really does, because he's the better wrestler, he's the younger fighter, he's the more hyped up prospect, he's been doing well since the first time we saw him on Contender Series, and this is one of those classic fights where you think, oh, Bay's gonna go in there and just dominate Silva. But when you actually look at who Bruno Silva's fought and how he's done in those fights, it's not like he's been completely KO'd out in either one of them. And I always give him a hard time because in the Ulanbeko fight, he did get taken down a lot, and that's kind of the lasting impression I have in my mind. But he was able to secure takedowns himself against a very good wrestler. Like you had said, if you're an Ulanbeko fan, that fight was much closer than you would like to, than you would like for it to be, because he was such a big favorite. And I know you're gonna get to the stats here in a second. You can kind of look at what Ulanbeko did, some of the pros and the cons to his approach. Bayes may be able to replicate some of that success. He's got really good takedowns in the clinch, but one thing that Bayes is really good at is doing takedowns in the center of the cage. He's got really good cage control, and he's great at keeping his opponent from getting their back up to the cage to then try to wall walk up. He does have great control, and that's the thing for Bruno Silva. In all of his fights, he is going to get tired, and it just kind of depends at what point in the fight he will. So if Bayes can really make him work early, I think it's going to look good for JP.
And I mean, you look at the record of Bruno Silva. We're talking a split draw back in 2017 against Casey Kenney. He was on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil season 4. Like, he's taken on a decent level of competition all the way up through. And then you look at the UFC run. In the Khaled Taha fight, he gets 2 takedowns of his own. Then he takes on, like I said, David Dvorak. He's able to get 3 takedowns. He gets 4 against Tagir Ulanbekov. You like to see it. Then if you look at the way that the judges scored the fight. Well, against Tagir Ulanbekov, one judge gave Silva the first round. One judge gave Silva the third round against Ulanbekov. Now, were they all exclusive? No, and it ended up being a unanimous decision win for Tagir Ulanbekov. But some could make the case that Bruno Silva at least put on a competitive fight, right? Against the guy that you expected to be, boom, like, this is Habib's best buddy, and they've been training forever. So, for Bruno Silva, you have to watch out for the takedowns. Is he the type of guy that's going to throw, you know, tons of power in combination? Probably not. We have seen finish wins, you know, by him in the past. But typically, if he's going to get a win, he's going to grind you out. He's probably going to win a boring decision. So if we have a look at this one, Matt, I mean, listen, it's the second Silva in a row for JP Bayes. If you go back to Contender Series from this past year, well, he actually fought back in November against Jacob Silva, picked up a huge win there, and really the rest is history.
He looked good.
An opportunity like this is huge. So if I have a look at the odds, I was surprised by this one, Matt, because Bayes opened to minus 170. He got as far down as minus 244. That line's popped back up. He's minus 183 favorite now. So right now, as of the last couple of days, the money's coming in on Silva, open to plus 145, down to a plus, or up to a plus 194. He's now a plus 151 underdog. And if we go over to Tapology, just have a look, 769 total votes, 88% Bayes, 68% by decision. I have to say this, on this card as a whole, I had a little bit of a look at the Tapology votes beforehand. A lot of people are going favorite heavy on Tapology, and I'm really surprised by some of these votes.
So, here's the thing. I know I said kind of buyer beware. It's going to be heavy caution if you do pick Bayes. I still do like him in this fight. I do think his wrestling defense will be there. And if you can just make Silva work, he will start to fatigue as the fight progresses. And if you're Bayes, if you can get past that first hurdle, if you can prevent the takedown for that first 4-minute stretch, then I think his takedown will open up as the fight goes on. I think he'll be able to use his wrestling a little bit more on Silva as you get into that late second, early third round, and Bayes should be able to slowly take the fight over as it goes on. But again, I'm not that confident in this pick.
I mean, again, with Bruno Silva, constant pressure, he has good enough defensive wrestling. I talked about it, the fact that, yeah, you get taken down by some very good fighters, including Tagir Ulanbekov. It's just going to happen. But when I look at this one, yeah, I mean, the ceiling's on Bayes. You're going to hear it every single day until this card comes out. Husband and wife, both making their UFC debuts. Who do you think they want to have winning? Et cetera, et cetera. I don't have the highest level of confidence in terms of, you know, putting any money on this one. Because JP Bayes, again, you're 9-2. We're talking about 2 losses. 1 to Joby Sanchez back in 2017. Yes, he's been able to win consistently. All of them by finish on this 5-fight win streak. Again, the fight against Gamzat Magomedov, you can go back and watch it with Brave. It's on YouTube where, listen, he's in a compromised position with his back up against the mat, and there's an illegal strike. He wins by disqualification, but all signs point to a JP Bayes win. So, Matt, we're going Salt Bae in the first one. We're both going with JP Bays to get the win. I'm really looking forward to this card. We have the man himself, Gregor Gillespie, coming back after a terrible loss to Kevin Lee many moons ago, taking on one tough New Zealander in Brad Riddell. And in our main event, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. So you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Really interesting fight, Matt. At women's bantamweight, we have Reiju Panda, Julia Avila, taking on Yulia Stolyarenko. And Matt, we don't have a ton of Lithuanian fighters in the UFC, so you get excited about it. And for her UFC debut, it almost seemed like she was this dark horse that never really was in the women's bantamweight division. And I say that because she matched up against Yana Kunitskaya, and the line was fairly close. Like, she was a plus, what, 155, 165? Like, there was a lot of respect on Yulia Stolyarenko's name. And if you have a look at the record, I mean, yes, she was on the Ultimate Fighter Season 28. She lost to Penny Kanzad. She made it to the finale to fight Leah Letson, lost by split decision. Insert the graphic, because, listen, if you type in Yulia Stolyarenko right now on Google, the first picture is a picture of Leah Letson, and that's just a problem, because we got to get over that. Since then, she went on a tidy little win streak, won five fights in a row. You look at it, armbar, 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 and we're talking sub-minute armbars. And if you want to see a disgusting fight, go watch her fight in Invicta FC Phoenix Series 3 for the bantamweight title. She took on Lisa Verzoza. What a disgusting double of cuts. Oh my gosh. Bad. Poor Lisa Verzoza, but a great fight. Like, if you liked Ross Houston when he took on one tough out Nicholas Dalby, the Verzoza Stolyarenko fight was for you. The reason why I want to put a lot of weight onto that one is because Yulia Stolyarenko is mostly known for her throws and her jiu-jitsu. You see that from all those armbar finishes. But the real X factor about Stolyarenko is the fact that from 2017 to about 2019, she was in the art of not just eight limbs, we're talking nine limbs. She's fought in Lethwe, and she has huge wins. She's a world champion in Lethwe, and that's just crazy to me. And we've seen it where, as she's progressed in the bare-knuckle headbutting type series, she's gotten better at striking in MMA. It's something you just love to see.
I don't know about that. I think she's definitely gotten better, but I don't know if the fact that she headbutts people in one discipline allows her to really open up her MMA striking now that she's in the UFC. She did like a single headbutt against Yana Kunitskaya, and maybe Yana just trained her defense a lot for that technique. But I look at that Yana fight, and it's interesting, because Julia Avila is kind of like a poor woman's version of Yana Kunitskaya. They do a lot of similar things to a degree, but when I look at them, they do match up physically a lot in this weight class. They are two of the bigger fighters, and they will stand a similar range. The thing with Avila, though, she's one of these classic fighters where her top pressure is insane. Her on her back is awful, though, and it's this really weird kind of give and take where if she gets this fight to the ground and she gets on top of Yulia for any period of time, I'm very confident Julia Avila's ability to ground and pound her, possibly get a submission, pass her guard, and really get good work done on the ground. But I can look at the flip side of that, and if Yulia Stolyarenko can get Julia Avila to the ground, it's going to be much of the same thing, only on the other side. And I hate to call it the Sarah McMahon effect. We've had very different names for it, the Louis Smolka effect, but it is one of those weird cases with Avila. And you go back to the Eubanks fight, that fight was really odd to me, because Avila is one of these fighters who, if you're much more physically strong than she is, she's going to have a tough time with it. And I know I talked about the Jin Yu Fry fight. It didn't really turn out that way, but again, just a fighter who's going to struggle physically with some of the matchups. Avila will be another one of those fighters. And with Stolyarenko, it's odd to say that an MMA fight could come down to strength, but I really do think that this is one of the few fights where that could be a big X factor, because I do think if Avila can get on top of Stolyarenko for any period of time, I'm talking 2 minutes, like at the end of a round, I think she can get great work off, and I don't really think Stolyarenko can get back up to her feet. I think she has a good ground game, but her ground game is much more defensive than it is, oh, I'm going to look to sweep you and get on top of ground and pound you. If she was more sweep heavy, I would favor her in this fight like crazy. And that's the thing, because Avila needs to get this fight to the ground. She's another one of those fighters, I'll bring out Courtney Casey again, who, to really open up her skill set, she has to incorporate the takedown. And that's the thing for Avila. It's always hard predicting her fight, because it does come down to, can she take her opponent down or not? And a lot of the women in the top 10 of bantamweight, or even the top 15, have a judo background, and that's what makes this matchup really interesting.
And if you look at Julia Avila, has a judo background, has a jiu-jitsu background, I mean, they match up very well in this one. For Avila, if you watch any of her tape before the UFC, so if you go back to the Alexa Connors fight, that was a fight of the night, if I'm not mistaken, with Invicta. Then she fought Penny Kanzad, beats her by decision, 2019. That's a huge win. We saw Penny look great against Tajara Eubanks. who Julia Vila struggled against. So you're excited about that one. She had bookings with Carol Hossa all day and Sunday, twice on Sunday, really. That didn't happen. She fought Gina Mazzani, finished her in 22 seconds.
Didn't learn a lot.
Again, if we're making the cheap comp to Invicta, the Phoenix was rising. And then she fought Sajara Eubanks. All three judges scored that 29-27 for Eubanks. And that's the thing. With Julia Vila, her wrestling's decent. Defensive wrestling, maybe not the best. Her aggressiveness on the feet is great. Like, if you go back again and watch a lot of the fights on her way up, very, very good. I mean, she trains out of Oklahoma Martial Arts Academy in Edmond, Oklahoma. I've been there. That's north of the city. Nice little place. But she trains there, and she is a geologist for an oil company. How neat. But in a fight like this, again, Yulia Stoyanenko, you're going to have the threat of the takedown. You're going to have her doing weird, funky stuff with her back up against the cage, and Yana Kunitskaya pushing her forward. Normally has exciting fights. It's just it didn't really materialize her last time out. So if we do have a look, Matt, at the odds for this one, might come as a bit of a surprise to some people, the fact that the odds are as close as they might be. Because, again, Julia Vila, well, no, she's a big favorite. She opened as a 3-1 favorite. She's now minus 360. More money coming in today on Avila. You look at Stoyarenko, open plus 250, now at a plus 277. A lot of hate for that Kunitskaya fight, and I saw that all over Twitter, and you even see residual hate now. For Julia Avila, people are really behind her from those first two wins in the UFC. Of course, the Invicta performances. It should be an interesting fight of two top-notch former Invicta fighters.
I'm good. Okay, this is the thing. I agree with you. This probably should be Julia Vila, maybe 160, like minus 160. She shouldn't be a 3.5-1 favorite. That is kind of ridiculous. I'm going to pick Avila again. It's hard to say, oh, I'm picking her. She is a massive favorite. But I do like her wrestling. I like her top control. I like her pressure on the feet, too. And I do think if she's the one forcing the fight, too, Stoyarenko, really pushing forward, using her front kicks, using her takedowns, I think she'll be able to get the unanimous decision.
And, I mean, the funky thing with Julia Vila, you look at her record. I mean, her debut in MMA, her pro debut, she beat Marion Renault. Wow. Then she beat Nico Montano. They were supposed to be rematched, and that didn't happen at the end of last year.
Nico, where you at?
And, again, for Julia Stoyarenko, started her career off 1-2-1, and since then she's been 8-2, so a great thing to see. Now, I know I focus more on one fighter, you focus more on the other one, that's just how we structure the video, but in this case, I'm actually going to go with the big underdog. I'm going to go with Yulia Stoyarenko in this fight, and I think, again, in the striking, it's going to be a great fight. Yes, you might give an edge here or there to Avila. I think that pressure is not going to go away from Stoyarenko. And if she's able to get the takedown, if she's able to impose her will on top, she's got a great opportunity. And look it up. She looks a lot like Fedor. So I'm going with Lithuania's Yulia Stoyarenko. You're going to go with the Raging Panda, Julia Avila. It should be a great fight. Okay. I love the card. We got two great fights at the top. Gillespie taking on Riddell. In the main event, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. So Matt, keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight at bantamweight. We have the UFC debut of Jesse Strader taking on Montel Quick Jackson. And Matt, I love this fight because fight fans, you might be familiar with Jesse Strader. And if you're a Fight Night Picks fan, I talked about him quite a bit last week because he fought Marcelo Rojo over with Combate. And it was one of the most insane rounds that you've ever seen in all of MMA. And it embodies Jesse Strader's style to a T. He's a guy that's always moving forward. And for Jesse Strader, that's every single fight. The guy pushes an insane work rate. He has very, very quick hands and a lot of power in his hands. So if you're a fight fan, you've probably seen him with Combate. You can find the clips on YouTube. You know how good of a boxer he can be. If you're a pop music fan or a TMZ fan, you might know that he's training Aaron Carter. He is his boxing coach and manager to fight Lamar Odom.
Former sixth man of the year?
That's absolutely insane, and Fool's Gold is an underrated track. But I look at this, Matt, and Jesse Strader, primary striker. He wrestled when he was in high school. You can see a little bit of a base in that one. Kind of worry about him when he gets up against the cage, but again, primary boxer. He rips it to the body, too.
He
throws a lot of really nice hooks, not just in that Marcelo Rojo fight, but if you go out and you watch a lot of the other performances that he's had, it's a lot of quick finishes, too. You like to see all of that from Jesse Strader, a guy who was just anticipating the UFC call, and he gets this fight on about 10 days' notice, taking on Quick Montel Jackson, a guy who, listen, UFC debut, he lost to Ricky Simon. Halfway competitive fight. Then he beats Brian Kelleher in one of the craziest finishes. It was an early submission. Great one there. Beats Andre Sukumtov, beats Felipe Claris, loses to Bellator's own Brett Johns his last time out, his only fight in 2020. But for Montel Jackson and a Pura Vida BJJ, you know exactly what you're going to get. One of the biggest guys in the bantamweight division.
Huge. He really isn't. He's a guy who is going to use his physical strength to really incorporate his wrestling. And the Brett Johns fight, we did not see the best version of Montel Jackson. And that's what kind of worries me in this fight. He hasn't been the most active in the last couple of years. And it does concern me how much that will play an effect. Because, you go back to the Brian Kelleher win. That win was like 3 years ago. It's not like that win was only 6 months ago. It was a while. And, again, you kind of think, wow, it's this new kind of up-and-comer in Montel Jackson. He's almost 30. Like, he's a guy who does kind of have to get going at some point, because I do think there's a spot in the top 15 for him. Now, when I say that about fighters, they tend to get brutally knocked out, so I'm just going to stop saying that about fighters from here on out. But Montel Jackson is a tough fighter to beat with a full training camp, and I'm going to go back to what I said about another Combate veteran, if you will, last weekend, Marcelo Rojo. It's tough to beat a guy like Charles Jourdain with a full training camp, much less on short notice. I think Jesse Strader is a very good fighter. I think he's a very entertaining fighter. I think he's a guy who, no matter what, no matter who he's up against, he's going to fight to level his competition. And sometimes he's going to go in there and look really good against guys who you think are borderline ranked, and sometimes he's going to look bad against guys you don't even think belong. Like, he could probably lose to Andre Sukumtov and knock out Jonathan Martinez. My point is, this is a very hard fight for him to make his UFC debut. And Montel Jackson, you look at what he does well. He's going to wrestle you. He's going to really incorporate jiu-jitsu and his very heavy top pressure. That's going to be tough for Strader to deal with. Like you mentioned, Strader doesn't deal well with his back up against the cage. He reminds me a little bit of Kelvin Gastelum. And I use Gastelum as an example because it's more him with the striking defense. When he gets behind those two black lines and gets his back towards the fence, he becomes a different fighter defensively, and he doesn't move the same way. Strader does have that similarity to Gastelum. Again, I'm not really putting him to having the same ceiling as someone like Kelvin Gastelum, but if Jackson can back him up and get him up against the cage, we're just going to see one of those classic, I'm going to take you down, you're going to get pretty much back up to your feet, and I'm just going to take you down again. I think for Montel Jackson to win this fight, he has to make it boring, and it always sucks to say that, but it really is his key to victory in this one.
For Jesse Strader, you look at the overall record again, and he doesn't want you to, but 5-1 so far with the loss to Marcelo Rojo. Listen, Marcelo got finished by Charles Jourdain. That deserved 50K. I know Dana decided to give out 4 performance bonuses and not a fight of the night. That one definitely deserved a bonus. Both guys put on an absolute show, and Marcelo wore it on his eyes. But really, if you go back and watch the fight against Strader, they go at it almost to the end of the first round. Marcelo ends up getting the finish, but you look outside of that, Roberto Hernandez, 0-0, Christian Garcia, 3-4, Jose Aguayo, 2-1, Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, 1-3, and then Isaiah Batten-Gonzalez back in August of 2019, 4-0. Now listen, if you listen to the interviews from Jesse Strader, he had fights lined up in the interim, most of them fell through, and all of 2020 was a bit of a wash. He's been training, and he's been training Aaron Carter, so there's that. But coming into a fight against Montel Jackson, that's no easy task for anyone, really, in this division.
Did you ever think training Aaron Carter would be an X factor you'd bring up in one of these videos? Because I definitely didn't.
I mean, maybe this fight's going to be Aaron's party, but I doubt it. Somebody's going to want candy.
He could be like Machine Gun Kelly with Stipe and like just be his hype man into the cage. Montel Jackson's going to beat Jesse Strader. I really think he will. He's going to grapple him. He's a much more experienced fighter. He's been in there with the better guys. And again, with Strader, it is a little disturbing when you do a deep dive on his level of competition. He's never been in there with anyone close to the style of Montel Jackson who's at this level of a grappler. I won't say he's never been in there with someone at his level because Rojo is a very good fighter, but the grappling of Jackson's really going to be tough for Strader to deal with.
Could Jesse Strader knock out Montel Jackson? 110%
he could. Oh, yeah. He
could go in there, throw a nice combination of the body, toss a hook up top, and knock him out completely. And I would not be surprised in the least. And I know I'll say that from week to week, but seriously, Jesse Strader's a huge underdog. Jackson opened a minus 500 favorite. He's now minus 636 on best fight odds. For Jesse Strader, open plus 385. He's now plus 447. And out of the total votes on Tapology, there's about 670 of them. 93% Jackson, 49% by decision, 39% by knockout. Listen, Strader's got a shot. I know he's, only had 6 pro fights, but the guy's got a shot. I'm not taking him in this fight. But I'm telling you, he has one. Because for Montel Jackson, the grappling's there. The striking is there. He really has a lot of that package. If he can just figure out the distance management against a guy like Schrader and doesn't have the problem that, say, an Andre Ewell has in this division, Montel Jackson should be able to pick up a pretty decent win. And it's a shame for him, too, because he has been out for about 7 months and change since his last fight against Brett Johns. So, both of us going with Pervita BJJ's Montel Jackson, but overall, really looking forward to this fight. It should be a better one than maybe those odds would suggest. So you want to keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, man, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time banger at middleweight. We have Trevin Giles taking on Georgia's Roman Dilije by way of Ukraine, training out of Extreme Couture in Las Vegas. Matt, for Roman Dilije, 8-0. I can go over the grappling accolades, and I will. 2016 Oceania Regional ADCC champ above 99 kilograms. He also won the FILA World Championships in 2013 above 99 kilograms. That was last year that FILA did the World Grappling Championships. Roman Dilije, your champ. And Matt, this guy is an absolute ball of fire. But he's not like the Fireball Kid. But he is a ball of fire. Because if you watch Roman Dilije fight, you know exactly how good his grappling is. Now, a lot of people are going to fall into the trope of, well, is Roman Dilije Mr. Vieira? Mr. Adolfo Vieira? Such a good grappler, but his striking wasn't there. His striking defense wasn't there. Maybe, but not. But not. Roman Dilije, you want to see him strike. You want to see some exciting fights out of him. Go back and watch the fight against not David, but Michael Pasternak back with WWFC. It's a great one. It's a spinning backfish knockout. It's insane. The thing that I always worry about when I watch Roman Dilije is he's switching stances. He's smiling. He's feeling it. And if you go back and watch his last fight against John Allen, the commentary team is all over it. This guy's way overconfident. He's wasting his movements. He's doing way too much. He's just got to simplify it and listen to his coaches and conserve his energy. Because you saw it in the first round, he has John Allen down. And he yells to Eric Nix, like, hey, coach, you want me to submit this guy? And then he doesn't. Now, he wins by decision. It was a split. It shouldn't have been. Dilije won the fight. But if you go back and watch it, there's so many frustrating things where this guy's overconfidence can get him in some bad spots. And I'll talk about Trevin Giles, too. But Roman Dilije, for me, is one of those guys that, like, my Piotr Jans and my Cyril Gans, like, I've been following the guy. I'm expecting big things out of him. Here's the thing that I worry about. He made his pro debut years ago at heavyweight. Then he moved down to light heavyweight. Now, I'm going to pop the tweet up, but he did say in the last little bit he's been weighing consistently at 205 pounds, and he's been thinking of making the move down to middleweight. He's had opponents not want to take fights. Trevin Giles takes this fight because he was originally supposed to be taking on my guy, EFC and KSW vet, Dricus Duplessis. Duplessis out of the fight, Dilije moves down to 185. I worry tremendously about the gas tank of Roman Dilije.
It's tough to worry about something where you don't even know what he's going to look like yet. So I guess I'll focus more on that on question mark kicks. I hate to just dismiss what you had said, but again, it is hard to say what he is going to look like.
Still looks big on the Instagram.
He still looks big on Instagram. And a lot of 185ers walk around at 205. So if he's consistently walking around there, I'm not that concerned about the weight cut. I'm concerned with the wildness of his strikes every single time he throws a punch in the UFC. And Trevin Giles, I don't think he's going to be the guy to take advantage of this. But if Roman Dilije ever fights like Robert Whittaker, it would be very, very bad for him. Now, I understand I'm comparing him to, like, one of the better fighters we've seen in the past 10 or so years. But really accurate strikers who can throw shots right down the middle are going to give Roman a lot of trouble. Because he loves to wind up, not like Bubbles, more like Marge Simpson. But he, like, winds up and then throws an uppercut instead. Or then throws an overhand instead of an uppercut. He does get very wild with his punches. The great thing is, if he lands, you're going to go down. But he doesn't always land. And it is a case of kind of a Zabit Magomed Sharipov where he's throwing all these crazy strikes and missing with the majority of them. And yeah, the commentary is really going to focus on, wow, look at the power. And if that lands, you're going to hear if that lands a lot in Dilije's fights. And that's what does concern me a lot at 185. He's going to have to fight a lot of accurate strikers to really work his way up into the title picture. Even think of a guy who's barely even ranked. Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall is Roman Dilije's worst nightmare. He's going to let you throw all your wild punches and then wait to counter you with a big shot. Trevin Giles has decent power for this division. I wouldn't say he's got phenomenal power. He knocked out Bavon Lewis, but Bavon Lewis never looked that good in the UFC. He was a hyped-up prospect, but we never saw the best version of him in the UFC. And that's just what it is. I'm sorry, Bavon. I hope you're not watching, but you never looked that good. Trevor Giles did look really good in that fight, but I do think it was a case of he looked good against a fighter who probably should have been in there with him. And you go back, even look at the James Crowe's fight. James Crowe's on 3 days' notice went up 2 weight classes to fight Trevor Giles. I thought he won that fight. He completely out-grappled him for the majority of that fight. And that's what I keep on coming back to. If Roman Delice just goes, I'm a grappler this fight, I think he can dominate Trevor Giles, and I don't think this is a very close fight. If he goes out there, really dedicates himself to his judo, works those head and arm throws, and gets his fight to the mat, I think he should dominate. My question is he going to stay dedicated enough to a game plan like that? Because if he does stay on the feet, I know I said Trevor Giles might not be the person to take advantage of his wild strikes, but he does have decent pop in his hands, and if Roman does get himself really out of position trying to throw a big bomb, he can get cracked with a counter shot.
You just contradicted yourself, but I won't focus on it. My point is, if you look at the stat lines for these guys, you can only focus on one and not on the other. Because for Roman Delice, you have a very limited sample size. You have the John Allen fight that was back and forth, but really, Delice did quite a bit in that one. And then you look at the fight against Hadis Ibrahimov, and he gets a big finish win in that one. So the stat line, while it is mostly nice, you just don't need to pay much attention to it. But if you do look for Trevin Giles, and again, the question marks start to creep in because Zach Cummins submitted him, Joe Mearshart submitted him, he has a close fight against James Krause, win or lose,
he's grappled.
You do worry about it. And then you look at the Bavon Lewis fight, and he looks amazing. I mean, Trevin Giles had great head movement in that one. He had happy, active hips. He had very good takedown defense. And so far in the UFC, 80% takedown defense, and he's been around long enough. You know, you go back to the Antonio Braga Neto fight that he had, the 2 losses, Krause Lewis, it still adds up. You also look at the wins that he had on the regional scene. He beat Brennan Allen. He beat Ike Villanueva. He beat Ryan Spann. Like, he's fought very good competition, and you talk about the differences in the metrics. Strikes landed per minute, 3.57 to 1.83 absorbed, 64% defense, 57% striking accuracy. I'm telling you, those are good numbers. 87% takedown accuracy, too. On paper, Trevin Giles is a very good and economical fighter. And if you watch it in practice, the one thing that bugs me, and I think, listen, it's not an easy fix, and nobody's ever going to overcome it overnight. If Trevin Giles threw a little bit more volume to really kind of mask some of his power shots, he'd have a great opportunity in this division.
Oh, he would, but again, you can't focus on just the takedown defense numbers. Look at him grappling when he does get to the mat. He's bad. He is not a good grappler whatsoever, and he's not going to get him back up to his feet.
He'd get better.
He can, but again, you're focusing on the fact that he has 80% takedown defense and using that as, oh, he's good at defending takedowns, so therefore his grappling defense must be all right. It is not. And I know we haven't seen Roman Delice really use a grappling-heavy style in his fights yet, but if he does stay dedicated to the takedown, if James Krause can consistently out-grapple you for not only minutes but rounds of a fight, Roman Delice should be able to replicate that exact same game plan.
Now, let's talk Roman Delice and about the fight style. So, the guy wings power shot. Shots like they're nothing. He throws out little teeps. He doesn't really throw much for a leg kick. He will crack to the body as well if he wants to go all out psycho. He's got good hands, but again, he's a very, very happy-handed power puncher of a grappler. And it's just a weird mix. Again, I am so worried about the cardio in this one because he's never fought at middleweight in his pro career. He grappled way up at about 218 pounds, 99 kgs plus. And then he fought at heavyweight, light heavyweight. Now we're here at middleweight, training, living in the States at Extreme Couture. So it's going to be an interesting one. Now, if we look at the topology votes, overwhelmingly Delice. 682 total votes, 81% Delice, 62% by knockout. Do you know Roman Delice? If we look at the odds, Matt, listen, Giles opened at plus 130. He's now plus 115. For Delice, open minus 150. Now at about a minus 141. So the odds are closing in. Giles is gaining. The fans have Roman Delice, who I would say at this point starting to gain a bit of the fan favorite type of style for his fights. What do you think as far as this fight's concerned?
It's a dangerous fight for Delice, but again, this is a good matchup for him because Giles doesn't have the type of power that's going to put you out for making one mistake. He can hurt you, he can clip you, but as long as you don't go out from that initial shot, you should still be able to stay in the fight. And for Delice, I don't like how wild his striking is, but I do think if he can get this fight to the mat and really force Giles to work, I do think he'll be able to tire Giles out to make it so that your cardio, I guess, disadvantage won't be that big of a disadvantage in the fight. So I like Roman Delice in this fight.
I'm going to take the over 1.5 rounds, and if I didn't have to make a pick, I wouldn't. So, yeah, over 1.5 rounds, and if you really want the pick, Roman Dolice is a great grappler. I think he has a good opportunity, but I don't like him as the favorite. I think Giles has a, you know, as good of an opportunity. I wouldn't
Who's
be surprised
pick,
if this opened as a pick'em. I'll take Dolice, but I do not love him in this one. So my official pick, over 1.5 rounds. I'm going with that. You're going with?
Roman Dolice. I'll say who I think's going to win.
I'm going over 1.5 rounds. Matt's going with Roman Dolice. It's a fight night picks first. I'll get Dolice too. But overall, really looking forward to this fight and this entire card in your main event. Also middleweight, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. So keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. Really interesting fight at lightweight. We have Leonardo Santos taking on Grant Dawson. Who would have ever thought that 41-year-old Leonardo Santos would fight another prospect? Well, I did. You did. And everybody at home probably did. For Leonardo Santos, one of the craziest careers of all time. I mean, this has been one of my bugaboo type of guys that I always keep on my list of, you gotta watch out for this guy, like Claudio Silva. When's he gonna fight? I don't know, but Leonardo Santos is active once again, and if you look at his last number of fights, he had the huge win over Stevie Ray after about 3 years away, knocked him out in the first round. His last time out, he picks up a big win against Roman Bogatov, a guy who was one and done like Zion Williamson in college. But the fact is, Roman Bogatov really punched his ticket out of the UFC for illegally kneeing Leonardo Santos twice in the nuts in the third round, and then in the head in the third round, so much so that Mark Goddard took 2 points, and if you look at the judges' scorecards, honestly, it was probably 29-25 because I gave Santos a 10-8 in the second round because he beat the hell out of Bogatov. Pretty much had him finished. Mark Goddard had a weird night that night. Leonardo Santos looked pretty good for the first two rounds, and in the second one he got it, but he got tired. Really, it was a 9-8. But if you know Leonardo Santos, here's two things. 7-time world jiu-jitsu champion, hellish right hand, and if he wants to put everything together for the first round and second round, he'll incorporate a lot of calf kicks. It's really weird to see a guy that's this far in life have this new school approach to the way that he fights. And that's why I really like Leonardo Santos. You look at the win streak that he's on. He's got a finish win over Kevin Lee. He's got a submission win over Rocco Martin. He's beaten a decent level of competition. And if you really want a deep cut, his pro MMA debut was way back in 2002, June 29th to be exact. It was at Shooto Treasure Hunt 7. And he fought Takanori Gomi. And he lost. How crazy is that, that he's still fighting now?
It's insane. The fact that he is 41 years old, still fighting prospects in the UFC is absolutely just absurd to me. And the fact that that Kevin Lee fight was a long time ago, too, and everyone brings up, oh, he knocked out Kevin Lee. He hasn't fought a ranked guy since then, and you would assume that he had that opportunity at least at some point. This fight is what I've been asking for, though, because Grant Dawson can't keep on beating featherweights, weighing in at 150 pounds, and finally, he's going to be fighting at 155 pounds, which the weight class that he belongs is an A because he just can't make 145, it seems, anymore. But I do think that at this stage in his career, just in life, really, you're going to grow. And 155 is much more suited for his body type. He's a very heavily muscled guy for the weight class. And I do think he'll fit into this weight class quite well because he is still quite young. His ground game is absurd, though. The ground and pound, the submission ability, just, he doesn't do everything Khabib does, but he has a very Khabib-esque style, where all Grant Dawson wants to do is get you to the ground and pound you until he can open up a submission. And that's what's so fun about this fight, because Santos isn't a guy you just go out there and, oh, I'll take him down with a double leg and we'll see what happens. Not a guy you want to play around with the ground. Here's the thing, though. Being 41 does have some drawbacks, and those drawbacks come by way of cardio. And if you're a guy like Grant Dawson, I'm not saying you should go for the takedown all the time, because I don't think on the ground is where you're going to win this fight. But if you go for the takedown just to make Santos work to get back up to his feet, just make him work to get back up to his feet, age will play a factor at a certain point. And if you're a guy like Grant Dawson, youth is on your side, and the power is on your side too. If you can just make Santos work from the second this fight opens until it stops, you're going to put yourself into a great position to win. My issue is Grant Dawson. Not that he gets trigger happy on the feet, but sometimes he will stay at range a little bit to set up his takedown. Not the place you want to be standing with old Leonardo Santos.
So Leonardo Santos, like I said, has a good right hand, and it's a laser all the way through, and it cracks. Like, this guy, forget about the age factor. Let's just call it what it is. The guy can still strike very well.
Oh, man.
And again, he has a new school style being an older guy. See, I fell into the trope. It's my fault. He has decent takedowns, but when he gets taken down, listen, I mean, it's not like he's a fish out of water. He is very adept on the ground. For Grant Dawson, his boxing's not great. Let's just call it what it is. And he gets happy, like you said, where he just wants to run in, start to really brawl, and he can get clipped, and we saw it. Nadir Imani even clipped him a couple of times. You look back, Derek Minner, not so much. Minner, actually not that bad at featherweight. So, very hey. Good one. But for Grant Dawson, weighed 149.5 in the fight against Minner. In the fight against Nadir Imani, it was catch weight at 150 pounds. This one's at 55. And you talked about his build. Grant Dawson's built kind of like the Tasmanian devil. It's all upper body with very slight
like
of waist.
Dorito.
Like, he's probably a 29 waist if I was guessing what his jeans were. I mean, he's what, 5'10"? I think that's a pretty good guess. But if I'm focusing on this fight, great top pressure. And when he's on top, he doesn't leave many things open. He keeps his arms nice and tight, and he keeps his head in position. And you see that with certain fighters. Again, I hate to use an example week over week, but Tim Elliott, when he fought Jordan Espinoza, we're riding it with the forearms. We're putting our head in his face and into his chin.
I'm going to really push back on that a bit, though. Grant Dawson causes much more damage to people on the ground than Tim Elliott does.
But that's the point. Let me finish my point. Grant Dawson causes a lot more damage, but even when he's not raining down blows, he's just trying to wear on you and to tire you out. I think that helps him a lot in this fight. Now, I've been a Leonardo Santos guy for as long as I can remember. Grant Dawson has an opportunity in this fight. I mean, he's more than a 2-1 favorite in this fight. And if we do talk about the odds, open a minus 185, he's now a minus 212 or thereabouts on best fight odds. If you look at Leonardo Santos, open a plus 160, now a plus 172. The money is on Dawson, 813 total Tapology votes, 70% with Dawson, 73% by decision. It's easy to say wear on Leonardo Santos. Because, I mean, look at the guys that he's fought. I mean, Stevie Ray got knocked out. Roman Bogatov tried to wear on him, worked in the third round, even though he cheated a little bit. He kind of did the old Eddie Guerrero. He lied, he cheat, he steal, and then he's out of the UFC. But it's easier said than done to beat Leonardo Santos. Grant Dawson does have a style that you would think would incorporate itself well to get a win here.
I don't just think it's going to. Hot take, Grant Dawson's going to destroy Leonardo Santos. And I know that's your guy, and I do not like saying it, but let's just call it what it is. You have the young, up-and-coming prospect who's way more physically strong, who has the wrestling advantage. Here's the problem. Santos can't get this fight to the ground if he wants to. He has good wrestling, but he's not going to go out there and out-wrestle Grant Dawson. Grant Dawson can decide when this fight's going to take place on the mat or when it is going to take place standing. Now, for Dawson, you probably don't want it standing all that often, and I understand with Leonardo's background, you would think, oh, don't take him to the ground. Grant Dawson is not dumb enough to get caught in an armbar by Santos off his back. He does have very good top pressure, and he's going to make you pay for being on the ground. So while you are trying to set up submissions and whatnot, he's constantly going to be getting off ground of him, and that will wear on you. And for Santos, we've seen cardio be a bit of an issue. It's not his fault he's 41 years old. Like, time happens. There's nothing he can do about it. And it's not his fault the top-level guys don't really want to fight him because he's a dangerous guy who's not the ranking. But at a certain point, the prospects are going to catch up to that veteran, and I think this is going to be that fight. I like Grant Dawson a lot in this one.
I've got Grant Dawson as well. I wouldn't say a lot, but I do like the matchup because, again, Santos has an opportunity in this one. It's not bad matchmaking by any means, and you look at the ways that he can get a win. Again, he can outbox Grant Dawson in the first round. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. You see it from Grant Dawson where he'll throw a head kick, he'll throw those flying knees, he'll throw flying knees to close distance. He can get hit by a straight shot on one of those fairly easily, but if you push Santos with his back up against the cage, you can really start to wear on him, take him down. He has a hard time getting back up when he's pressed back up against the cage. And I think that feeds into a Grant Dawson win. So I'm going with the guy at Lee Summit, Missouri, representing Glory MMA Fitness. We're both going with Grant Dawson to get the win. But man, my guy, Leonardo Santos, you never know those crafty vets. Really looking forward to this card. We have a crafty bet in the main event. You have Derek Brunson taking on the young up-and-cover Kevin Holland. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt. As we always say, let's get into it. Now, we get a fight that was supposed to happen about a month ago. Marin Renault, the Bleeding Bruiser, was supposed to take on Macy Chasson. And, of course, well, the fight ended up getting rescheduled. We made a perfectly good prediction video and preview. So we're going to throw it back to that, update the odds, and maybe our picks change. So let's get into that. Marin Renault on a three-fight losing streak, taking on Macy Chasson, who won the Ultimate Fighter Season 28. Like, my guy, where you at, Juan Espino? And for Macy Chasson in the UFC, it's been a good run. She beat Penny Kanza to win that title, if you want to call it a title, but the tournament championship. She knocks out Gina Mazzani. She knocks out Sarah Morris. She loses to the Elbow Queen, Lena Landsberg. And then she beats Shanna Young, who was coming in on short notice. She had fought at flyweight, at bantamweight in the past. But that was a really good statement win for Macy Chiasson. That was a good confidence builder. It's been a while. It's been almost 2 years since we saw her last in the cage coming out of Fortis MMA. Now, I said for Marion Renault, she's almost 44 years old. She's on a 3-fight losing streak. But this fight's a lot more competitive than just those numbers. Because if you look at that 3-fight losing streak, well, she lost to Kat Zingano 2.5 years ago. And she got dominated in that one. And her last loss was to Raquel Pennington. Well, she got dominated in that one. But the middle loss to Yana Kunskaya, I went back, I checked it out on MMA Decisions. The majority of the MMA media members over there, the panelists, if you will, they scored that fight for Kunskaya. I was in the minority and I had it for Renault because she cracked Yana Kunskaya and had her really hurt. And I had 2 rounds for Renault versus, you know, the 2 that most had scored it for Kunskaya. There were some people that agreed with me. But all that to say, it was a halfway competitive fight against a decent fighter.
Oh, 100%. And here's the great thing about Marion Renault. One of the more underrated strikers in the division. And the Sarah McMahon fight, I always go back to that. Because Sarah McMahon is dominating Marion Renault. And here's the thing you have to know about Renault. She is phenomenal at jiu-jitsu. She's terrible at wrestling. She is the bizarro version of Sarah McMahon. And you see it happen in their fight where Sarah McMahon is able to get on top and control her from on top. Marion Renault, we talked with Louis Smolka effect. It's kind of the Marion Renault effect. She's really good at jiu-jitsu, but she will just stay on her back and have these long periods of inactivity where she's giving up time. And we all know what a judge takes into consideration more than just time off their back. Yeah, unless you're Brian Ortega off your back, the person in your guard is probably going to be winning those positions. Now, Marion Renault in the second round of that fight shows off what she is so good at. She's got big pop in her shots. And it's weird because, again, talk about the fact she's almost 44 years old. She is a gym teacher. She beats the brakes off every other gym teacher in America, if not all of North America, because she does have that really nice power on the end of her shots. When she gets in top position, especially on the mat, she's got phenomenal submissions. I really like her triangle choke, but we did see the Kat Zingano fight I always go back to, because Kat Zingano just kind of throws her down and takes her down and accumulates a lot of top control, but doesn't do a lot with it. Because if you do give Marion Renault space, she does have good sweep. She can get a submission of her own. But when fighters go in there and they do fight more of a wrestling-oriented, kind of safe game plan, if you will, you can really neutralize a lot of the good weapons of Marion Renault, where Macy Chiasson, she does have great striking. She's great from top position. We see her elbows, too. But Macy's bread and butter. She's great in the clinch. She's got really good power in the clinch. We saw that in the Gina Mazzani fight. And listen, Gina Mazzani's not the best fighter you're ever going to go in there and fight. But it's kind of the theme of Macy's record, where she has wins over people she should be beating. It's not like she's going out there and has any surprising win where you're like, oh, wow, she knocked out Valentina.
Penny Kanza, it's probably the best one.
It's a good win, don't get me wrong. But beating Penny Kanza doesn't really tell me a lot about your long-term future in the division. And it always is curious, too, because they fought at 145. That season of The Ultimate Fighter was heavy hitters. So it was the women's featherweight with the men's heavyweight. She looked great in that season, and I really like the striking of Chiasson. I just don't really know where I could put her at skill level-wise, because the Lena Landsberg loss is a bad one. And I think Lena Landsberg's a fairly good MMA fighter. She's kind of good at everything. We talk about the elbow. She's the elbow queen. But she's got good wrestling. She's got good clinch work, good distance striking. She doesn't really excel at anything, I wouldn't say. She's kind of dominated Macy at every area of the fight. She used the clinch against Chiasson. She was able to take her down. She was able to really get some top control of her own. So although I really like Macy in this fight, I like her youth, I like her distance striking, she's by far the more heavy-handed out of the two, even though I do think we should pay respect to the striking power of Marion Renault, I just don't really know what version of either fighter I'm going to get. Like, every version of Marion Renault I think of is like, oh wow, that fight was 3 years ago. And for Macy, it's, well, your peak is really, really good, but I just haven't seen you beat anyone on Marion Renault's level. So hopefully for Macy Chiasson, this is our big win to really get her on people's radar. But there's just so many question marks going into this fight that I have a hard time thinking that Macy is a 2-1 favorite over Marion Renault, even at the age of 43.
And when I look at, you know, Macy Chiasson's record, so you beat Penny Kanza on the Ultimate Fighter at 145. The Penny Kanza that fought on that Ultimate Fighter, and today's Penny Kanza in that short 2 years, she's a much better fighter, especially at 35. I know I was excited about her before that season, the Ultimate Fighter, and truth be told, in cards on the table. Again, I like Juan Espino a lot, and it was great on the Ultimate Fighter, but I'm not a big Ultimate Fighter guy. But Penny Kanza, I was excited before the season. Gina Mazzani win, below Kanza, I would say. Then you look at the win over Sarah Morris, below Kanza, but that's in my mind's eye. She loses to Landsberg, who's a 10 to 15 bantamweight, and then you beat Shanna Young, that was on short notice. I know, you know, Macy Chiasson, if you look at her record, she was supposed to fight Sajara Eubanks back last year. That fight fell out. Chiasson withdrew. And, you know, obviously less than, less than a good thing that you see a fighter withdraw out of a fight like that. Now taking on Marion Renault, who, again, I set it up this way. You're almost 44. You're on a 3-fight losing streak. She's 9-6-1 overall. I think she has a good chance in this fight.
Oh, yeah. Like, stylistically, it's great for her.
You can't count Marion Renault out of this fight. I think under normal circumstances, Macy Chasson comes in here like we know if she can. She's probably going to beat Marion Renault by decision. It's a tricky one, though. It really is.
I agree with everything you said. Like, the best version of Macy Chasson should go out there and just outstrike Marion Renault, not really get into a lot of grappling exchanges with her. And I hate to say play it safe, because, again, she could get the TKO at this weight class. One of the more heavy-handed women, especially at 135. I'm much more comfortable with your pick. I do like her by decision. I think she'll just do enough every single round. Listen, you're not going to be that impressed by Macy in this fight, I don't think. I think she is going to have to fight a smart fight, not just go out there and think, okay, this is the biggest name opponent I've ever been against. Let's go out there and try to make a really nice statement win. I think she just has to go out there looking for the win. Marion Renault, yes, she's on a 3-fight losing streak. Yes, she's 42, but she is not an easy fight for anybody.
And if
she,
44.
For almost 44, which is wild. But if she's able to get top position on Macy, it's going to be an interesting fight. I don't love the odds where they are. I think they should be closer, but I do agree with you. I think Macy by decision is probably a good pick.
All right, Matt. So we're updating the folks at home talking about Macy Chasson taking on Marion Renault. And as far as those odds are concerned, Macy opened a minus 225 or thereabouts. She's actually a minus 208 favorite now. And there's some late money coming in. And I say late, we still have about a week before the fight, but some late money coming in on Marion Renault, who opened a plus 190. She's now at a plus 169. So the money's coming in on the old gym teacher, Marion Renault, and away from Fortis MMA's Macy Chasson, who, again, if you look at her record, I mean, 1-1 in her last two, that Lena Landsberg fight maybe weighing on a lot of people's minds. What are you thinking?
1-1 in her last two, 0-3 in her last three. Again, being 1-1 in your last two, you either win or you learn. And I do think the Lena Landsberg fight was more of a learning experience for a fighter like Macy, who is very young in her career. She does only have 7 fights. This is going to be another one of those experience-gaining fights, but I do really like Macy Chasson in this fight. Yeah, it's tough to pick the 43-year-old in this one.
I mean, you look at it for Marion Renault, young in terms of fight years. You look at it,
21 years older than me.
You look at it in terms of the overall quality of opponent, the last three, Katsangano, Raquel Pennington, and then in her last fight, Yana Kunitskaya, former title challengers? Former title challengers. So there is that. But yeah, I'm going with Fortis MMA's Macy Chasson to get the win. We're both going with Dallas, Texas' own Macy Chasson. And I'm really looking forward to this card, Matt. We have Gregor Gillespie taking on Brad Riddell in an awesome clash of styles, the co-main event. And then you have Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland in the main. So get locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Really looking forward to our next fight. We have two ladies looking to make their respective UFC debuts, and one of them is a huge favorite, as we have Cheyenne, the Warrior Princess. It used to be Velismus, formerly Velismus. Now it is Baze, taking on Montserrat Ruiz. Her nickname is Conejo. It means rabbit. And if you really look at it on Tapology, it's Rabbit Mad, and I'm Rabbit Mad. I'm really looking forward to this fight, because for Montserrat Ruiz, we look at her overall. She trains with Kings MMA. You saw her in the corner of Jocelyn Edwards over on Fight Island. And listen, it didn't work out in Jocelyn's second fight. It happens against Carol Hosa. But if you look at it in her debut, it went swimmingly against Wu Yanan. And for Montserrat Ruiz, I mean, just an awesome amount of pressure. I know I went back and I watched some of the pre-fight stuff for Invicta debut when she took on one really tough out UFC vet, Danielle Taylor. And listen, very stoic and thoughtful woman. I mean, she really picks and chooses what she says, but listen, representing Mexico, she's training now in the States, and she really talked about the fact that she began her mixed martial arts journey in wrestling. She ended up coming to the States, starting to round things out a little bit. Her jiu-jitsu's getting better, striking's getting better. And you can see that from the time that she was with some of the smaller promotions in Mexico, all the way up to her XFL fight for the strawweight title, way back about 3 years ago now against Sarai Sainz. She picked up a big win there. But you watch her fight in that fight, and then you watch forward to Danielle Taylor, and then you watch forward against Janessa Maranjan. I mean, a huge amount of growth in her game. I mean, 9-1 right now. Maybe she was waiting for a UFC call. She finally gets it. Maybe you would have liked to have seen, like, a Contender Series spot. I know she was supposed to fight with Invicta for their strawweight title back at the end of last year against Emily Ducati, who's a great fighter. I mean, call it what it is. Her record's a little salty, but since she came over to Invicta, she's put on some very, very good fights. And listen, that's a training partner of Cheyenne Bays as well. So for Cheyenne Bays, coming out of a great gym, Fortis MMA, like I said, Jinyu Fry, Emily Ducati. I mean, there's so many good fighters over there with Fortis. And really, her background's Taekwondo. Pretty good takedown defense, and her striking shines when she's putting a lot of pressure on her opponents.
Not even just her background being Taekwondo. She dropped out of high school to get better at MMA and to train full-time. That's real dedication. Like, I love basketball, guys, but I do not think my parents would have been like, yeah, you can drop out and hopefully you can make the Raptors one day. Like, not a real career path, but in MMA, you can do that. And I gotta be honest, I'm gonna start this on a bit of a downer note. I was excited for the Kay Hansen-Cheyenne Bays fight. I thought that was a really fun fight between two great up-and-coming prospects, and it's unfortunate that we're not getting that fight this weekend, but I do think the replacement in Ruiz is going to make for a very fun fight. The first thing you brought up about Ruiz was her work rate. The same thing should be said for Bays. Her fights, she's always doing something, and I always bring up Clay Guida, because Clay Guida is the best example of, there's not a lot of just spent time in the cage. He's always doing something. Bays has that, where she's always throwing punches, she's always moving forward. There's not just a lot of inactivity in her fights where she's standing in a mirror just kind of reacting to what her opponent's doing. She will be the one taking charge, and that's what makes this such a fun fight, because the one moving forward will be the one winning, and I do think you can kind of simplify it to that. If Ruiz is moving forward, defending some of the takedown attempts, making Bays a defensive fighter, she should be able to win this fight. But if Bays is the one moving forward, getting Ruiz up against the cage, really using her combination and her kicks, it's going to be a long night for Ruiz, and it is tough to oversimplify a fight to that degree, but this fight to me really does come in overall aggression, and you hate to say cage control, because that's the last thing the judges look for when they do judge a fight, but cage control is going to be really important between these two. But overall, I do really like the work rate from Bays. I like her takedowns, I like her ground and pound, even though when the first things you think of in her skill set is her Taekwondo and her striking, a very, I won't say adept ground game, but one that is definitely coming along.
And if you look at Cheyenne Bays, I mean, they claimed on one of her fights, I think it was with LFA, the fact that she claimed that she had 22 amateur fights. Now, for the record, I could find 7-5 on a couple of different sites, 7-6-1. But all that to say, in her amateur career, she fought Jillian Robertson and Vanessa Demopoulos, that I'm sure you've heard of in the past.
Misha Tate's her manager.
Montserrat Ruiz, again, she had that fight against Danielle Taylor, UFC vet. And if you go back and watch it, Taylor kind of plays on the outside. Stick and move, a lot of good striking, moves out of the way of a lot of the Montserrat Ruiz strikes. The other thing that you'll see out of Ruiz, a lot of head and arm throws. And that was the big focus in her last two fights. So in the Danielle Taylor fight, she'll close distance, grab your head and try and toss you over and almost big brother you into submission. It worked for her in the third round of that fight against Danielle Taylor. She gets her into that position. She starts to hammer away. Julie Kedzie hated it. And then you go back and you watch her last fight. And she fights again, Janessa Morandon. It's in the main event. She wins by key lock from Scarfold. Now that's what Tapology has it. If I can explain this a little bit. You have Montserrat Ruiz. She closes distance. She gets that head and arm throw. Julie's like, I hate those head and arm throws. Gets it. Gets her down. Grabs her opponent's arm and puts it between her legs. And then just starts punching away. And the commentary says, you know, those punches don't hurt too badly. But eventually, they'll start to hurt. She just keeps that good top pressure on top, rides it out, continues to hammer away. And then when she gets the opportunity, grabs the arm again, flips it over, puts all of her weight on the elbow, and gets a tap. And it's one of the most amazing sequences I've ever seen. I remember watching it live thinking, holy crap, like she's somebody you have to watch out for. And then they put her into a title fight against Ducati, and it ends up falling out due to enhanced COVID protocols is what they called it. I don't know what that means where you're from, but that's what the internet has it as. And eventually Kayla Harrison got a main event out of it, so good for her.
There you go.
But if you look at Montserrat Ruiz, I mean, yes, she has, what, 4 more professional fights. They weren't against the greatest level of competition, and there was quite a bit of separation between some of the fights. I am interested to see her in the UFC. One other troubling thing for Ruiz that she's going to come up against, if she hasn't already, is her size. She's a very small strawweight, 5 feet tall, 61 inches of reach. She's going to be at a 3-inch height advantage, a few inches of reach. But what she makes up for it with is the fact that she has that great offensive pressure. great wrestling, and she will not stop. And especially, again, going back to that XFL fight, it was a 5-rounder 3 years, 3 months ago, but she still kept that work rate into the championship round.
Still a short-notice fight for her, though, against a fighter who just had a full training camp. And I don't care how good your cardio is, you're fighting someone who had a full training camp, and they dedicated 8 weeks, or hopefully around 8 weeks, and they were doing everything right, to getting ready for this fight where you took this on 2 weeks' notice. Like, Kay Hansen just pulled out of the fight last week, so it's not like Ruiz has had a long time for her for this fight. If this was on a full training camp, I do think it would be closer, and I think the odds would reflect that, but I am going to pick Bayes in this.
To me, I'm going with Cheyenne Bayes as well, because you brought up a really good point. I mean, we've seen it in some of Montserrat Ruiz's fights where she's chasing as opposed to cutting the cage, and I think that's a huge issue against somebody that has the footwork and the head movement of Cheyenne Bayes, and she has very good defensive wrestling as well. There's a lot of things to like out of Bayes, especially where she was getting ready for Kay Hansen that would employ some of the tactics that you'd see from Montserrat Ruiz. You'd expect a takedown heavy game plan, a lot of pressure. So for Cheyenne Bayes, I like a lot of things in her game, and I really like them in this one. The volume's great, the power's great. She throws a lot of different looks at different fighters. This should be a very good fight, though. I mean, listen, the odds don't make it overly competitive. If we're focusing on them, I mean, you look not that close. Cheyenne Bayes right now, she opened at a minus 250. She's a minus 356. For Montserrat Ruiz, she opened a plus 200. She's now a plus 277. Over on Topology, the votes aren't very close. 626 of them, 74% going with Bayes, 92% by decision. The 26% that have Ruiz, well, there's 18% that say she'll win by submission. To me, she just doesn't throw enough volume to be able to do it. Maybe she can keep pressure and get on top. I just don't see it. I do like, though, that she will be in the UFC, will get a look at Conejo Mad. But I am going with the Warrior Princess here.
I do think both Bayes are going to pick up wins this weekend, and I don't know if that's a first for couples getting a win on the same card, but it'll be neat to see.
Matt, both of us going with Cheyenne Bayes to get the win. Really looking forward to this card. We got some great fights coming up. Hey, Griffin Sung Kanung, we got that as a possible fight of the night. So keep it locked in with Fighting Apex, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
I love our next fight at welterweight. We have Max Griffin, and I don't know if he knows the popular or formerly popular Canadian kind of alt-rock, dark rock band 3 Days Grace, but he likes pain without love. Pain can't get enough. We have Max Payne Griffin taking on the assassin, Sung Kanon, and I love this fight for a lot of different reasons. Max Griffin's one of those guys that just does not go away. He's like, I don't know, the cat. The cat came back the very next day. Max Griffin always comes back. You watch his fights, and without a doubt, you enjoy them because he employs a boxing-heavy style. His footwork's kind of herky-jerky. He kind of moves all over the place, and he usually has pretty good wrestling to fall back on. He's maybe not your typical fighter at a Team Alpha Male, but he has trained there quite a bit in the past. I threw it up on the graphic. You might see different gyms out there. MMA Gold Fight Team's another one that he's represented as well. But for Max Griffin, pretty decent boxing, pretty good pressure. And listen, he could get knocked down. He could get the cobwebs rocked out of him. He could do the same. The fight's still going to go on. It's very hard to put away Max Griffin. His opponent, Sung Kanon, has fought some of the best fighters this world has to offer. He's fought Israel Adesanya. He fought Brad Riddell. Hell, he lost 2 fights in a row and the UFC went, fuck it, we're signing him. And they brought him in and he's wrecked house. And if you look at his record, 4-1 so far in the UFC, fights Bobby Nash's debut. And you go, well,
Bobby Nash is terrible.
Well, you go, well, Sung Kanon's got bad wrestling. Bobby Nash has got a good wrestling pedigree. And Sung Kanon knocks him out in 15 seconds. Then he knocks out Hector Aldana while he's 4-3 now.
He also couldn't take a punch.
All right, simmer down. Loses to Alex Morono. Hey, sometimes both guys are going to lose to Alex Morono. Then he fights Derek Krantz, beats him, and he knocks out Callum Potter and earns a performance bonus. Now, Matt's laughing.
You've never seen 3 more underwhelming TKO victims.
But for Sung Kanon, decent level of competition.
Oh, yeah.
And he's beaten who they put in front of him in the UFC, unless you're the great white Alex Morono. So, you have 2 guys that are kind of at different points in their career. For Max Griffin, 35 coming into this one. You have to think he needs a win, 2-3 in his last 5. But again, decent level competition. Thiago Alves used a split decision. Alex Morono, a decision where he got rocked. And a split against Alex Oliveira. The wins, Zlim Imadiev never should have been in the UFC. And in his last one, Ramiz Brahimi, who took it on short notice, and he blew his ear up.
This is going to be fight of the night without a doubt, guys. I'm really excited for this, because Max Griffin, listen, we talk about him like he's won 7 UFC titles, but he is the same age as LeBron James, and at a certain point, you are going to start to slow down, and that's what worries me. At 35, welterweight is one of those weird divisions where it is a bit of an in-betweener. You can be a guy like Wonderboy Thompson, who, yes, his nickname's Wonderboy, but he's almost 40 years old, and he's still very fast for the division, has the reaction time, but I think he's a bit of an anomaly. And you look at most of the other guys in the division, Tyron Woodley is another example. You see him as he starts to age, Robbie Lawler, but that was more due to damage, I think, than anything. But Woodley, when you start to get older, A, you can't keep up with these younger fighters with a higher volume, and you do just become slightly more defensive. But for Max Griffin, he's kind of gotten wilder the longer that he's fought, and the Thiago Alves fight is the fight that I always go back to, because Thiago Alves, A, shouldn't have won that fight, and I love Thiago Alves. I'll probably never admit that he's supposed to lose a fight, but that fight was really back and forth. He just dropped at the start of that fight. It was as close to a draw as you could probably have without actually, like, having a corrupt judge, but it was a very close fight, and it was back and forth. But Griffin's one of these fighters who, when he gets rocked, that's when the fight really starts. It doesn't start until he gets hurt, and it's not a great attribute for a fighter to have, but if you're looking for a fun fight, that's what Max Griffin's going to give you. Go back to the Mike Perry fight, because that's the best version of Max Griffin we ever saw, and this one we're going to have to bring age up. I always think, oh, he beat Mike Perry, what, like 8 months ago? That fight wasn't that long ago. That fight was almost 4 years ago. It has been a while since Max Griffin kind of had his marquee win in the U.S. UFC, and that's what worries me in this fight against Song Kanon. He should win. I think he's the better striker. I think he has more power. I think he's the better wrestler. But I do worry, with his age and the fact that he does get clipped a lot in his fights, could Song Kanon be the guy to clip him clean on the chin and he finally goes down and doesn't get back up and do that kind of zombie Max Griffin where he goes, I'm just a boxer, then I get hurt, now I'm just a wrestler. It's really fun. If you're looking for a good fight, Max Griffin's going to be involved in one. It's just at a certain point, that style is going to come back to bite you. I think he can go out there and completely out-wrestle Song Kanon if that's the style he decides to go with. But Max Griffin's not your traditional wrestler like Curtis Blaydes, where, oh, I'm just going to go out there looking for the takedown. He's going to strike because he is a very good striker, but he can get clipped, and that's what worries me a lot in this fight.
And if you look at Song Kanon, this is where it gets really weird. So he loses a fight against Alex Morono. Nobody took anybody down. His wins, he didn't get taken down by Bobby Nash, got taken down twice by Hector Aldana, got taken down 3 times against Derek Kranz, got taken down once by Callum Potter and finished him. It's so weird. And you look at his style. Throws great body kicks. Oh, yeah. Puts everything into his combinations. He's there from pillar to post unless he gets finished. And if you want a great fight, well, he had a fight of the night against Alex Morono. And if you look at poor Max Griffin, wasn't a fight of the night, but I consider it a fight of the night. I thoroughly enjoyed that fight. Both guys beat the brain cells out of each other's heads. So, when I look at the odds for this one, Matt, I was a little surprised. Max Griffin opened up minus 127, respectable. The line dropped. He's minus 182 favorite right now. For Song Kanon, open, again, respectable, plus 106, now to plus 149. All the money's coming in on Max Griffin. If you look at the Tapology votes, just for fun, 839 of them right now. 67% Song Kanon, 59% by decision. The money's coming in on Griffin. The fans have Song Kanon to get the win. What are you thinking here?
I don't really know, to be honest, because I do think that the boxing version of Max Griffin, sorry, gets clipped and knocked out. But the wrestling version wins this fight probably 30-26, and that's what's so appealing about this fight, I guess, because it can go one of those two ways. I'm going to pick Song Kanon. I might change that pick on question mark kicks. I'll be very open about it because I'm very on the fence, but I'm going to pick Song Kanon. I do like the accuracy of his shots. I like his investment in the body work, and if he can work the body enough to take away some of the cardio of Max Griffin, it'll make it a much more fair fight in that second and third round, and I do think Song Kanon will be able to clip him at some point.
The funny thing for Max Griffin, so he fights Ramiz Brahimi, you don't want to take Ramiz down. He's pretty adept on the ground. So he strikes with him and he finishes him. Now, his ear blew up, but it was an accumulation of damage. Max Griffin looked amazing in his last fight. You look at the losses. Oliveira takes Oliveira down. He takes Alex Morono down 4 times. The fight against Salim Ahmadiyev, complete performance. Now I get it. Majority decision, whatever. He looked good against Salim Ahmadiyev. Salim wasn't meant for the UFC. And so on and so forth. He should have beaten Max Griffin, or sorry, should have beaten Thiago Alves.
Should be Stevie Dole.
The fight against Curtis Melander was what it was, but you get the same Griffin pretty well every time. You got to wake him up with the shots. I think he has a dance partner where that's going to happen, and for those reasons, I'm going with Max Griffin in this one. So we're split on the pick. I'm going with the United States of America's Max Griffin. You're going with China's Sung Kinnon. Love the fight, though. Possible fight of the night. It should be a great one. Really looking forward to our entire card. Gillespie, Riddell in the co-main event. Brunson, Holland in the main event. Keep locked in with Fight Name Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time banger at Bantamweight, Matt. We have Adrian Yanez taking on Gustavo Lopez. And I have to call out some of the Fight Name Picks fans because they come after me and they say, oh, big time banger. That's not a big time banger. I'm getting you excited for this fight. We have Adrian Yanez that, listen, the poor man's comparison is young Jorge Masvidal or a smaller Jorge Masvidal. Gustavo Lopez brings the fire every time. And listen, he got the short end of the stick in his UFC debut, but if that's what it takes to fight Merab Dvoishvili and get taken down for almost a record-setting amount of times, it's going to happen. Gustavo lost that fight. He comes out his next time, and he fights Anthony Burchak. And listen, this wasn't the Burchak of old that lost to Ian Entwistle his first time out in the UFC. This was a new and improved Anthony Burchak that really invested in his wrestling and his grappling. He had gone to the different grappling events out there in the world. He had taken on the likes of Ralphian Stotts, Bellator fame and fortune, and other big names. It was a new Anthony Burchak, is all I'm saying. Coming out of 10th Planet
new year
in
Burchak.
Tucson. And why do I mention Anthony Burchak so much? Because he was supposed to fight Johnny Eduardo on this card, and all of my research went to shit. But for Gustavo Lopez, what does he do? Beats the brakes off Anthony Burchak in the first round. And it was like, hey, this is the Gustavo Lopez that we knew and loved from Combate, the former champ over in that organization, with big wins over there. Like, you look at it. Let's pick out the losses. John Castaneda, you get finished. Marcelo Rojo lost to John Castaneda.
It happens.
Some guys do. So does Eddie Wineland, former WEC champ. You lose to Andre Yule. It's going to happen. You lose to Jose Alde. Okay, you worry about it a little bit. Then you come back and fight Jose Alde and knock him out in the first round. So,
pretty impressive.
For Gustavo Lopez, what is he good at? Very good wrestler. Very good top control. Very good grappler. He's taking on one of the better young boxers and one of the better young up-and-comers that we've seen in MMA recently. And listen, I have to throw this caveat out there for Adrian Yanez. He was originally supposed to be taking on Aaron Phillips back on the Halloween card. And that was, what, Anderson Silva and Uriah Hall. He was supposed to be taking on Aaron Phillips. He got Victor Rodriguez. And we said it in the original prediction video. Victor Rodriguez is not good. And this fight doesn't make a lot of sense. And what did Adrian Yanez go out there and do? Boxed him up, kicked him in the head, finished him very impressively, and then came on with Fight Night Picks and this week in MMA to talk about it. Now, Adrian Yanez, there's a great interview out there. You can find it on the channel. Gustavo Lopez, there's a great interview in the form of an article at FightNightPicks.com before this fight. So you can check both of those out. But if you look at Yanez and his record, he's fought Kyle Estrada to a split decision, LFA 78 in the main event. It was a three-round main event, but we went back and watched that. What's Kyle Estrada, if not a power puncher and a guy that's always there? You want to see an impressive record? Maybe he didn't win every fight, but Kyle Estrada's fought some of the best fighters out there. You look at that, a win over Kyle Estrada, a split decision loss to Miles Johns in the main event of LFA 55, a split decision loss to Domingo Pilarte, a loss in a second pro fight to Levi Mowles. Those are all big regional names that you either know from the UFC or you've seen around. Yanez has taken on those fighters. His boxing's great, and his defensive wrestling's pretty good. But I expect these two guys to clash right in the middle, and I love this fight.
This fight, again, I'm going to have to oversimplify it, but it's very easy. Can Gustavo Lopez take down Adrian Yanez? And this is going to be something that we're going to say for a lot of Yanez's career, because you're not going to want to stand at range with him whatsoever. He's got a really good kicking game, too, and everyone's going to bring up the fact, oh, he's like a tiny Masvidal. It's his boxing. Jorge Masvidal didn't knock anybody out until he came back from his weird retreat whole island thing. Up until that point, he won a ton of fights by split decision. And I understand he finished Cowboy, but when you really look through Masvidal's record, and he'll admit this, he was always very reserved, more reserved than he should have been. Adrian Yanez does not have that issue. He's a very aggressive fighter, but he's a smart fighter with his aggression. And I always think of Jeff Neal when I think of Adrian Yanez, not because they strike in the same way. Jeff Neal much more upright, he'll use his kicks a little bit more. But when they hurt a fighter, they don't just bump bum rush them and try to knock them out like Derek Brunson in the main event will. When Derek Brunson thinks he has you hurt, he just runs forward, throws a bunch of punches, tries to get you out of there. It's great if he can land those shots, but if he doesn't, he himself will be diminished for the rest of the fight. If Giannis has you hurt, he will still stay technical, and I do think Jeff Neal's the best comparison of this, because when Neal hurts somebody, he stays reserved, and then hits you with a big shot. Giannis will wait and look for the openings in your defense, and until he does fight a guy like a Mirab Dvalishvili, like a probably Ricky Simone would look to take
Cody Stamen.
Cody Stamen. Hey Dana, if you're watching, don't make Adrian Giannis fight Cody Stamen, because I really like Adrian Giannis, and I don't want to have to sit here and watch him get 30-25 and out wrestle for 15 minutes. I'm sorry. I think Giannis can defend the majority of the takedowns in this fight. And the thing about Giannis too, and here's, you can't say it's true until we've seen it, but he has openly talked about his ground game and the fact that he would like the opportunity to maybe show a little bit more of his grappling in the cage, because he hasn't been able to up until this point. Not saying Gustavo Lopez is the first guy you want to be testing your grappling out against when you are such a good striker, but I do think that there's more to Giannis's game than what we've seen in the UFC so far. I like him in this fight, and he's my new Jonathan Martinez, the weight class. Again, I gotta keep on bringing this up, because I don't think I've been off on a fighter that bad in a very long time. I think Adrian Giannis has a very high ceiling in this weight class. Very excited for this fight, because I do think we're going to learn something new about Giannis. Because Gustavo Lopez, like you had said, he's always going to be there. He likes to move forward, and he's a very aggressive fighter, which kind of plays into Giannis's hand. But it should be a very fun fight.
Sometimes your approximations on certain prospects are off. You have Jonathan Martinez. I have Adolfo Vieira. It happens sometimes. But if we look at the overall votes on Tapology for this one, 816 of them, 91% Giannis, 70% by knockout. If you look at the odds, Giannis opened to minus 230. He got to about a minus 190 or thereabouts, and then the money's coming back in on him. So he's minus 210 right now. The money did come in at one point and bumped up for Gustavo Lopez. He opened a plus 195. He's now at a plus 170 or thereabouts. I think it's a little bit closer than the odds. I think it's a little bit closer than maybe the fans would go with. Now, Adrian Giannis, the knockout of Brady Huang is amazing. The knockout went over Victor Rodriguez, amazing, because he slept him. Victor didn't belong. Listen, sometimes you come from Alaska and you're great, like Jared Cannonier, and sometimes you come from Alaska and you're not great. You're just not great. Uroš Mitić made a huge impact. For Gustavo Lopez, though, he's got that veteran savvy. He can get those takedowns. And he's not a dumb fighter by any means. You look at the way that he strikes, he gets it. He's not going to take some of those, you know, undue risks that you see other fighters take. And he's an extreme couture guy. You have to expect that you have a great game plan coming into a fight like this from a camp like Extreme Couture. So would I be surprised if Lopez won? No. Is it a pop and popcorn fight for Craig? Yes. But I will ever so slightly side with the younger prospect here in Adrian Giannis. I love the fight, a possible fight of the night, a fight they picks pop and popcorn fight. Will the shirts come out soon? Maybe they will, but I'll tell you what. 25% off fightnightpicks.com. Use that promo code FNP25 for this week until Saturday. We're both going with Adrian Giannis to pick up the win. Love the fight. Love the card. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say. Let's get into it. Interesting fight, as we have unranked heavyweights on a main card. That's usually a big red flag. But Bam Bam Tai Tuivasa is taking on Lord Kong Dante Almaiz. Matt, Dante Almaiz just had to wait a couple of fights in the UFC before he really turned it on. Picked up his first win in the octagon against Roky Martinez his last time out. Two judges had it, 30-27. One had it, 29-28. For me, I had a 29-28. I gave Roky Martinez the third round, but we saw a new and improved Dante Almaiz. He got the fight to the ground in the first round. He threw a little bit of volume. You primarily know him as a boxer with a more upright stance. He can move side to side pretty well, and he has a decent gas tank. I think he has an alright future as far as heavyweights are concerned, just based on the fact that he has the fundamentals. He's also very tall for the division. You look at it, 6'6", a giant reach as well. He's taking on one of the most hyped up prospects that we've seen in the heavyweight division in a while, whose star faded because he lost three in a row against a different level of competition. I mean, JDS, Blagoy Ivanov, and then you look at it, Sergey Spivak. We fell down a cliff, then they gave him the forever prospect, Stefan Struve, and he knocked him out twice.
And yeah, that's how you climb back up a cliff. You knock at a skyscraper. That's how you do it. Dante Mays does not have that bright of a future. I'm sorry. You sold so many Wolf tickets, and I know we like to get both sides of the story, but Dante Mays is the guy who won't be in the top 15 anytime soon, I don't think. Blagoy Ivanov right now is number 12, I believe. I don't think he's got a shot against him. Mersin Tabora is your 15th ranked heavyweight, and I understand I like Mersin Tabora probably too much, but the things he would do to Dante Mays, it would not be a close fight.
Just saying the tools are there.
Kind of. Here's the thing. Dante Mays, his issue is that he does have very upright boxing stance, like you had said. Tai Tuivasa only really does two things well, and that's throw overhand punches and calf kicks. If you're a boxer, what are you super vulnerable to, kind of no matter what, just due to your style? It's those calf kicks. And we saw Tai Tuivasa. I know you always roll your eyes when I make this example, but it is true. Go back and watch the JDS fight. He's doing very well for that first round and a half with the calf kicks. And you can tell it is forcing JDS to become a defensive fighter. He is moving backwards because of it, and the kicks are really giving him troubles. Now, does he still knock out Tai Tuivasa and completely expose the fact Tuivasa has no ground game off his back? Yes, he does. But for the first 6 minutes of that fight, Tai Tuivasa really is beating up that front leg of Junior Santos. And I understand GDS is about 73 years old in MMA years now, and he's no longer with the UFC, but he still does have very good boxing fundamentals, and he does a lot of the things that Dante Mays does well. He's just much better at them and a way faster fighter. If Tai Tuivasa can have a somewhat competitive fight with Junior Santos until getting dropped, I don't know what Dante Mays can do to him. I don't think Dante Mays has good enough wrestling to consistently get this fight to the ground. I think maybe he'll be able to get it to the ground once, maybe twice near the end of a round, but I don't think it's something that he can just consistently go into his back pocket for, oh, I can take down Tai Tuivasa consistently. And if you are standing on the feet with a guy like Tuivasa, we do make fun of how sloppy sometimes his striking looks. He's not the most technical guy, even though you look at his background with the Muay Thai and you think, oh wow, his technique must be phenomenal. He does get a little bit wild, especially with the hands, but I still think he's a much faster fighter than Dante Mays. I think his hands are faster, I think he's a more powerful guy out of the two, and I think his technique's quite a bit better. So for me, do I think Dante Mays can out-wrestle Tai Tuivasa? I think he might be able to for moments in the fight, but I don't think he'll be able to do it consistently whatsoever.
I worry if Mays tries to close distance with Tuivasa, he's gonna get cracked. I mean, against Roque Martinez, it's weird. Martinez is one of those guys kind of like Jack Black. You look at him, and size-wise, you discount him and totally dismiss him. There's a lot of people out there in the comment sections that did. I understand it. But he moves. He's very fleet of foot. He'll throw knees up the middle. He'll pop his elbows. He does a good job. And then into the fight against Dante Mays, he had a decent third round, but we really didn't get to see him open up. And in his debut, they put him up against Alexander Romanov. It's tough to look good against Alexander Romanov. My guy Juan Espino has to shortly. He's not looking forward to that one for Juan. But for Dante Mays in a fight against Tai Tuivasa, the odds are stacked against him. I'll say that. You look at Tuivasa, open to minus 235. He's now at a minus 229. So he dropped to about a 248, and now the money's coming in on Dante Mays. For Mays, he opened a plus 200, he went to about a plus 197, he's now a plus 183, and on the votes over in Tapology, 872 of them, everybody's a Tuivasa fan because he walked out to My Heart Will Go On.
For Spirit of a Shoe.
So 87% of 872, 80% have him to win by knockout. Now, my friend Steve had the beer drank out of his Vans, so congrats to Steve LeBlanc. But if I look at this one, Tuivasa Mays. If Mays closes distance, I worry about him against a guy like Tuivasa. I'm actually not going to say that about a lot of heavyweights, because there's a lot of heavyweights that can take down Tai Tuivasa. You saw it with Ivanov was able to do it. Spivak was able to do it six times before he submitted him. It's going to be tough. Even Jarjus Dano was booked to take him on. Jarjus probably would have done it too.
How dare you?
Stefan Struve did not, and Tuivasa closed that range, beat that skyscraper down, hopped up on the cage. Back of his heel hit Struve, knockout blow number two. I like Tuivasa in this fight for the fact that he's going to bring the fight to Dante Mays. Listen, Mays has that reach. I just don't know if he's going to be able to take advantage of it. And I like Tuivasa to close the distance and able to get a win here.
This is a classic, wow, this fight's going to be insane for 4 minutes, or it's going to be awful for another 11. And there's no other way to look at it. I think Tai Tuivasa, he's the faster fighter. He's the more powerful out of the two. I think he's the more technical guy as well. So it's hard to pick against Tai Tuivasa in this matchup.
Both of us going with Tuivasa to get the win and shoey in front of a crowd of no one. Maybe just Dana White. I'm really looking forward to this fight. We have a great co-main and main event coming up. Gregor Gillespie and Brad Riddell. And in our main event, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Fight Night Picks is always presented by Manscaped. You know it by now. Manscaped.com, promo code FNP. You're going to save 20% off your order and get free shipping. But COVID spring break is right around the corner, and you know what that means. Spring break in your pants. Manscaped is here to ensure the party in your pants never stops. Even Veronica Corningstone wouldn't say no to this pants party. So, for everyone prepared for a pants party this spring break, exclusive is 20% off discount. Use promo code FNP at Manscaped.com. Now, Matt, they want me to tell a funny grooming story. Listen, did I go on a trip one time and text my mother as opposed to my girlfriend that I was going to shave my nuts? Yeah, that's a real life story. Yeah. And if that's the first time you've heard it, it's actually true. But I didn't have one of these. I didn't have the Lawnmower 3.0. And if you're shaving your junk in the dark and you can't see what you're doing, you're in for a rough time. And you got to pay attention to who you're texting, for God's sakes. I can't stress that enough. But if you check it out, the Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the shed. It comes with the Lawnmower 3.0. You get the LED light. You get about 90 hours of battery. I've had this since, what, December now?
It's been a while.
I fire this fucker up all the time, wow, and it works amazing, and I haven't had to charge it yet. However, it does come with, and it's in the shed, so you gotta look for it. Sometimes there's great stuff in the shed. There always is. You get that nice little mount, and listen, you toss that, pop it right on the vanity, it looks great. What else is in the shed, Matt? I mean, I don't want to ruin any vibes this spring break or upcoming summer with some peaking pubes coming out of my swimsuit, so I'm going to shave with the Lawnmower 3.0. I'm going to slap on a little bit of the ball deodorant, the crop preserver. You know, I do it every week. Slap that sucker on. It's going to work great for you. They also have the Crop Reviver ball toner. It's a little spritz. TMI. I took a couple spritz this morning just to even out the workday. And listen, it works great.
It's a confidence booster.
It's a confidence booster for sure. And I mean, as well, you're going to find the weed whacker. Matt, you see me week in, week out.
Oh, wow.
You hear that in action, but I've had nose hair trimmers before that didn't cut the mustard. This one cuts the mustard, but also the hairs inside my nose, and I have some wacky nose hairs for a young feller. I also have some ridiculous eyebrows, but you just can't see them because I do a pretty good job of it. But all I can tell you is that for a limited time, subscribers will also get 2 free gifts if they order the Perfect Package 3.0. You're going to get the shed. It's a $39 value. And the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped boxers. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code FNP at Manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. I can't speak highly enough about Manscaped. You support the sponsors. You support the boys. Matt, what are your lasting feelings about Manscaped?
This stuff works. It's really good. Like you said, the bag's wicked. Everyone needs a bag to throw their toiletries and whatnot in. It's a great carrying case, great for travel. Manscaped products, they work.
They work. So make sure you check it out. Manscaped.com, promo code FNP, 20% off and free shipping on your order today. And Matt, as we always say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it. Really looking forward to our co-main event this weekend. We have Gregor the Gift Gillespie. Listen, is he the greatest fisher in the UFC? Well, probably. And Matt, listen, I gotta say something here. If you're fishing for deals right now this spring,
I got one.
Matt got a deal. Fishing for deals. Use promo code FNP25 at FightNatePicks.com. You're gonna get 25% off your order now until Saturday over on the store. But we have Gregor Gillespie. The guy loves fishing. Well, he hasn't been loving fighting lately because we haven't seen him in the longest time. His last time out, he took on, well, probably his toughest test. And I don't say probably, really his toughest test. Since he made his UFC debut back in 2016, he had the decision win over Glycao Franca. Since then, finished Andrew Holbrook, finished Jason Gonzalez, finished Jordan Rinaldi, finished Vince Paichel. That was a surprise to me. And he finished Yancy Medeiros en route to his fight with Kevin Lee. We get knocked out in the first round, and it just sent him into oblivion. That was back in November of 2019. But I say this with reverence. This is a clash of styles. Gregor Gillespie, power wrestler. You know exactly what you're going to get every time out. When he fought Jordan Rinaldi, the story was Rinaldi's a great grappler. Gillespie's a great wrestler. Rinaldi could have some success in that one.
It wasn't, though.
He had no success in that one. It was all Gillespie. And in most of Gregor Gillespie's fights, it's all one-way traffic. He trains with Andre Harrison. If you know anything about Harrison, he was undefeated for the longest time with World Series. not so with the PFL, but they've been longtime training partners out of Belmore Kickboxing Academy. Gregor's still there. Andre's still there. Gillespie is one of the better wrestlers that we see in MMA these days. You just rarely hear about him. You hear me gripe about the fact that he's in the UFC's top 15, and I still think that it's silly, but he's very good at what he does. He's taking on Brad Riddell. And Matt, if Brad Riddell had a song to kind of call his own, if he had a little bit of a calling card, it's one by Timmy Trumpet in a collab with Savage from New Zealand. "On the Mighty Trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor." And for Brad Riddell, former striking coach of Tiger Muay Thai, this guy's stand-up is insane. And he's the type of guy that even if he gets taken down, like by my guy Magomed Mustafayev, he just pops right back up and he continues to strike. His gas tank's insane for a guy that's fought at welterweight in the past, like his fight against Sung Kanon where he finished him. Great body shot in the follow-up. Brad Riddell, very fun style. If you want a song for Gregor Gillespie, I'll go one further. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. We're talking Carry On. Go your way, I'll go mine, and Carry On. And the guy just carries on with his wrestling. So you got Timmy Trumpet on one side with Savage. You got Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, because we got to go the Canadian angle. Neil Young in there. Gillespie the wrestler, Brad Riddell, the pure striker, who just pops right back up to his feet. This should be an interesting fight.
There's a lot to decipher from what you just said. There's no proof that Gregor Gillespie even knows what coronavirus is. The last time we saw him was the end of 2019, and we haven't even heard about him since then. It's not like he's been one of these fighters who, oh, there was rumored to be about in the summer, or he had something else planned. He's just been gone, and that's the craziest thing about Gregor Gillespie, because if you can remember his rise up through the ranks, he was a guy, they put him on a poster right before that Kevin Lee fight. You gotta remember, he wasn't co-main event spots before, he wasn't the most marketed guy by the UFC, but he was more than just your regular unranked lightweight. He was a guy on his way up, had a very dominant style, and a lot of people thought Gregor Gillespie might have the style to beat Khabib because of his wrestling. Now, that was a bit of a stretch. I think we all realized, kind of a ridiculous thing to say. Khabib would win every single round, probably by 10-7. Very, very confident in saying that. It's interesting, though, and I'm going to quote Teddy Atlas, because a fight is not a fight until you face adversity. Gregor Gillespie's only ever been in one fight, and it ended by one strike. That's the thing. I've never seen Gregor Gillespie face adversity and then come back. I've only ever seen him completely dominate his fights. There's never been points in his fights where it's like, oh wow, that was really close. It's either all Gregor Gillespie taking his opponent down and dominating them. Kind of like what we talked about with Grant Dawson in an earlier video. They do fight in a very similar style. The difference is, Grant Dawson is trying to put your head into the canvas with his ground and pound. Like, he has some of the better ground and pound, I'd say, in the UFC. He really makes good use of his top pressure and control. Whereas Gillespie, he's kind of fine to just, and I hate to say just lay on top of his opponent, but it really is the case.
Jake Shields.
He does have a bit of that Jake Shields effect. And I know you look through his record, you're like, oh, it's TKO and there's submissions. But it's a lot of, oh, my opponent's just kind of given up because they can't get up anymore. In the Yancey Medeiros fight, I know the strikes, oh, look, they're 61-1. It was basically Gregor Gillespie just out-wrestled Yancey Medeiros, and Medeiros couldn't get back up to his feet. That is what this fight's going to come down to. If Brad Riddell can stand for 15 minutes with Gregor Gillespie, he's going to send him to the Shadow Realm just like Kevin Lee did. If Gregor Gillespie can take down Brad Riddell one time in the first round, he's going to be able to do it probably twice in the second round and three times in the third round. We're going to know everything we need to know about this fight after 1 minute, and I truly do believe that. If Gillespie scores in this first takedown attempt, he's going to win this fight without a doubt. And I like Brad Riddell's ability to get back up to his feet, but when you do look at guys like Yancey Medeiros, who I would say has a more flushed out ground game than someone like Brad Riddell, I do think he's going to struggle, and I don't think we're going to see his same ability to get back up to his feet. For Riddell, I do like his counter shots. I like his ability to throw shots up the middle. You had mentioned body shots, but his uppercuts are really good, especially against wrestlers. And what we saw in the Mustafayev fight was he was able to get back up to his feet and really make him pay for every single takedown attempt. I think if he can damage Gregor Gillespie early, maybe get rid of some of that confidence Gillespie has coming into this fight, he might be able to take over as the fight progresses. But I do see this being another wrestling clinic for Gregor Gillespie.
The last time Gregor Gillespie won a fight was in January of 2019, and he's still a ranked fighter in the UFC. That's absolutely insane. Tell your local rankings panelists that one. He's 34 years old in 2 days when he steps into that cage. So if we can get a small golf clap, please. Happy birthday, Gregor. Happy birthday. For Brad Riddell coming in here at 29, like I said, the experience, Fazeev took over for him as striking coach, but a guy at a City Kickboxing. And listen, is he going to follow the likes of Carlos Ahlberg and Israel Adesanya this weekend? Or is he going to be the Kai Kara France of the group? Listen, Matt, the guy most likely to lose last weekend, I probably would have said Kai Kara France. But
he looked great.
Listen, he looked amazing. Good for him. A couple weeks ago now, I should say. For Gregor Gillespie, yeah, the layoff, it's worrisome. The fact that we haven't really heard about him. Kind of worrisome when you're 34 years old, coming into a big fight like this in a co-main event slot against Brad Riddell. Now I'm starting to have some Mike Goldberg issues.
What's the over-under on fish caught since the last time we saw Gillespie?
In the thousands.
Wow.
Catch and release. You got to put them back. You got to treat the fish just right. Now, for Gregor Gillespie, again, the performance bonus came in a big opportunity. That was UFC Fight Night Utica. There was all of 50 people in the crowd. It was like watching a small house show for pro wrestling. But he had a big win over Vince Pichel, where he took him down 7 times and he submitted him. When he fought Yancy Medeiros, took him down 6 times. The most disgusting stat line I've seen in recent memory, Gregor Gillespie per 15 minutes averages 7.02 takedowns per fight. That is absolutely insane. And for Brad Riddell, his takedown defense, 60%, but he pops back up. Mustafayev took him down 8 times. He took Mustafayev down once. Jamie Mullerkey took him down 3 times. He beat him pillar to post. Alex Da Silva, Lecco, took him down 3 times. He took down Lecco once. So it's not all bad. Brad Riddell is always going to get that Fazeev comp. I think Fazeev probably has a bit of a higher ceiling. We love that Jacasey fight, right?
Cool, those guys fight. If we get a Riddell-Fazeev fight, that would do everything for me.
Give it to me, please. Put it in an IV. I need it in my blood. But for this one, Riddell-Gillespie, it is a tricky one because it's such a clash of styles. So let's look at the Tapology votes, Matt. See what the fans are thinking. 842 of them, 76% Gillespie, 64% by decision, 21% by submission. If we have a look at the odds here, are they close? What are we thinking? Well, they're not as close as you might think. Gregor Gillespie opened a minus 150 favorite. He's now minus 239 average on best fight odds. For Brad Riddell, opened a plus 130, now to plus 190. All the fans are on Gillespie. All the money's on Gillespie. Brad Riddell hits hard, just like Savage beats with Timmy Trumpet. So what are you thinking here?
I want Brad Riddell to win this fight, and I normally don't say that, but here's the thing. I'd much rather see Brad Riddell against other guys in the top 15 of lightweight. I just would. I think there's more exciting fights in the future for Brad Riddell if he is able to win this fight. With that being said, this is one of the worst stylistic matchups for him in the UFC, and honestly, I don't know why they would have given him Gregor Gillespie, looking at where City Kickboxing is right now, because you look, I know the UFC didn't plan for them to lose 2 of their last 3 fights, I guess, but it's one of the more popular gyms, and just being associated with that gym does give you somewhat of a star pull, if you will. And Gregor Gillespie is going to completely ruin all the hype that Brad Riddell had. He's not only going to beat you, he's going to beat you in the most boring way possible, in a way that's going to leave a very sour taste in a lot of people's mouth afterwards. That's really going to discredit Brad Riddell in the future, I think. So I'm going to pick Gregor Gillespie. Honestly, he'll probably even win by submission. I like him that much in this fight. But Brad Riddell does have the tools to at least make Gregor Gillespie pay for some of his takedown entries. I just don't think he'll be able to stop him, and that's what you need to beat Gillespie.
Matt's going with a new day, a new way, and new eyes to see the dawn. You're going with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young here with Gregor Gillespie. I'm having a hard time with this one because, again, you look at Gillespie's last fight where he saw so much adversity from Kevin Lee, who was able to defend the takedown. You knew how good of a wrestler Lee was. And then he just goes full sicko mode, knocks him out in one of the most insane posters that we've seen in a long time, only for Kevin Lee to lose to Charlie Olives, ruin both of his knees, and get a weird head tattoo. In this one, Brad Riddell obviously has a shot. I can't wait to see what the commenters are thinking about this one. I like the consistency out of Gillespie, though, and I will side with him in this fight. Because, again, one takedown to zap everything out of Riddell, and if he can hold him down, you're going to learn a lot out of that first takedown attempt. If Riddell can keep it on the feet, Riddell's got a great shot. But I will side with the wrestler and one of the best fishermen in the game. Matt, we're reeling in deals. We're going with Gregor Gillespie. But hey, head on over to FightNamePicks.com. Use the promo code FNP25. You're going to save 25% off your order on the merch. Just reel in the deals. Looking forward to this card and our main event, Derek Brunson taking on Kevin Holland. It's an awesome matchup. I can't wait to talk about it. So make sure you check that out. Keep locked in with Fight Name Picks, Matt, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Big time main event at middleweight. We have top 15 contenders, Derek Brunson taking on the man himself, Kevin Holland. And I have to say this at the start of the video. Kevin Holland was our male fighter of the year last year at the 2020 Fight Night Picks Award. So a slow golf clap for Kevin Holland, who really put together an insane campaign. And I mean, if you look at his 5-on-in, it's amazing. And the way that he's kind of put on these fights has been amazing as well. He beats Anthony Hernandez, finishes him. He finishes Joaquin Buckley, back and forth fight. Back and forth fight with Darren Stewart, gave him the third round, yikes. Fights Charlie Ontiveros, who looked like Sideshow Bob, dropped him to the mat.
He's the real Charlie Olive.
He hurt Charlie Ontiveros, and it was kind of gross to see. And then he fights Jacare. Jacare takes him down. I know somebody's going to throw this one into the comments. A grappler took down Kevin Holland, and if a grappler can take down Kevin Holland, the wrestler Derek Brunson can. I'll give you that. Not a crazy thing to say. However, Jacare took him down, and Kevin Holland punched up like a bat out of hell. We'll make meatloaf references with the handkerchief. He punched him into oblivion and finished him up against the cage. And one of the craziest things, I never in a million years would have thought Kevin Holland is going to do that to a guy that I hold in such high regard as Jacare Souza. Now, does that give Kevin Holland all of Jacare's powers? No. He is a black belt in jiu-jitsu under Travis Luter, who had one of the most amazing MMA careers, if you go back and look at it. But for Kevin Holland, what a crazy run it's been since he made his UFC debut up a weight class where he got totally dominated by Thiago Santos. The fact where Santos is like, hey, how much punishment can you take? And he's just a sucker for punishment. For Derek Brunson, you look at the 5-on-in. There's two losses, and the big loss to me was, and again, you can't make the comp, but Jacare Souza. It was in South Carolina. Brunson was at home.
He got knocked out by a grappler.
Jacare knocked him out, and it was amazing. Then he gets knocked out by Israel Adesanya, and it happens. Well, then he knocked Elias Theodoru out of the UFC. Then he beat Ian Heinisch by decision.
Weird fight.
And then he finished the hype train of Edmund Shabazian. And listen, it's not finished yet, but Derek Brunson showed us a couple of different things. A, I'm not at Jackson Wink anymore. I'm not training at home in South Carolina. I'm training full-time with Sanford MMA. I'm going to dye my hair like Charlie Olives because it worked for him. And Derek Brunson looked good. Now, the commentary was oddly biased, if you go back and watch that fight, for Edmund Shabazian, to the fact where they would say, look at the way that Derek Brunson's shots aren't hurting Edmund Shabazian. And Shabazian has so much power to the fact that he'd throw a head kick and Brunson would go back. You see a lot of fighters do that. They'll get hit by a power shot or, you know, they'll kind of bounce off the cage, so on and so forth. Brunson did that, and credit where it's due, Shabazian does hit hard. But Derek Brunson withstood the adversity. He put on a veteran-savvy performance. He used his wrestling like we've always wanted to see him use. And at 37 years of age, this guy's seen just about everything there is in MMA. It's tough to look great against Derek Brunson unless you're a great fighter. Here's Kevin Holland's opportunity to try and do that, where, again, another prospect couldn't do it the last time out. I love the fight, Matt, so what are you thinking?
This is a phenomenal fight. Now, I'm going to have to go on your Jacare points. Jacare is one of the best MMA wrestlers of all time. I know he is primarily known as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, but if he can take you down, it's because his wrestling is insane. He is not a bad wrestler by any means, and his striking is also very good. He's knocked out Derek Brunson twice, once in Strikeforce, once in the UFC, so we're going to give Jacare his due. Here's the thing about this fight. I look at this fight and I compare it almost to a T of what we saw between Alexander Volkov and Alistair Overeem. And I say it for this reason. You have a tall, lanky striker who is extremely accurate against a shorter striker who does not have a great chin. I don't think Kevin Holland needs to be a powerful guy to knock out Derek Brunson. I just think he needs to get from point A to point B in somewhat of a fast way and stay efficient with his movements. Kevin Holland's pretty good at staying efficient with his strikes. He can get tired if he does have a very grappling-heavy game plan. And if you do force him to wrestle and to strike and mix it up a lot, it will wear on him. But if you go back and look at the Joaquin Buckley fight, he pieces him up that whole entire fight and knocks him out in the third round. And he does get better as that fight progresses. I understand Buckley's nowhere near the level that Derek Brunson is. But it's a nice thing to see from Kevin Holland that, A, he was able to hit a guy who does have good head movement, or at least he did in that fight, but he clipped him on the way out. And the fact that he got better as the fight went on, because I know that it's been inconsistent, to say the least, with Kevin Holland's cardio, because even the Santos fight, he loses to Thiago Santos quite bad. He didn't have bad cardio in that fight, though, and he was able to withstand everything Santos brought at him. But then you look at the Darren Stewart fight, and he does start to tire in that fight, so it is a really weird case for Kevin Holland. Another interesting point, too, the Derek Brunson Edmund Shabazian main event was only a 3-round main event, whereas this one is going to be the full 5. And for Brunson, I've seen him in 5-round main events before, but I've never seen him in a 5-round main event. The majority of the time, either he's getting knocked out in the first round, or he's knocking his opponent out in the first round. And that's always the interesting thing with Derek Brunson. He's going to get hurt in the first round. Just some guys can put him out, and sometimes he can just get back up to people's power. Go back to Ian Heinisch fight. Ian Heinisch drops him with a head kick in the first round, and you're like, oh, wow, this couldn't be any worse for Derek Brunson. He's been dropped. This happens a lot. But then Derek Brunson, the fact that he does have so much experience in the veteran savvy, like you had said, he's been in there with the best guys. Has he always beat them? No, he hasn't. But he's learned something every time he's been in there with an elite in the division. And look at some of the guys that Derek Brunson's fought. Jacare Souza, Chris Leben, Lorenz Larkin, Yoel Romero, Robert Whittaker. Like, he's been in there with some of the greatest fighters of all time. And you're going to take some losses when you do have that high level of competition. But for Derek Brunson, this is the ultimate crossroads fight. And I know that we call him a gatekeeper a lot, and he hates the term. But he is the first fighter I think of when the term gatekeeper gets brought up in MMA. Because Derek Brunson, he's not elite himself, but he's very close to being elite. He does everything very well. There's no massive weaknesses in his game. He doesn't have the best chin in the world. But other than that, he's a good enough striker. He's got big power. He's a good wrestler. He's just kind of good at everything. I do think Kevin Holland's that special kind of talent, though. And again, to go back to the Volkov Overeem fight, just his accuracy is going to give Brunson a lot of trouble, because I do think we're going to see a more wrestling-heavy Brunson in this fight. I do think at this stage of his career, he at least learned in that Shabazian fight, okay, if I'm going to be fighting these younger, up-and-coming guys, I can't just fight a kickboxing fighter. I just can't have a wrestling fight. I have to fight these guys in MMA fights. And we saw that in the Shabazian fight, where as Shabazian started to wilt from the pressure, Brunson incorporated a lot more wrestling. I think he's going to do that with Holland, but the difference is, I think Holland's going to be able to crack him at some point in the fight. I do think he's going to be able to put him down. But the interesting thing is, I don't know if Kevin Holland, A, is going to jump for a submission once he gets into the ground, or B, go for ground and pound. I really like that from Kevin Holland, because if he can hurt Derek Brunson, I don't expect him to tire himself out going for a ground and pound finish. He is so adept on the ground that if he is able to get on top of Brunson, I'm not saying he's going to out-wrestle Brunson. I think that's his worst path to victory. But if he can drop Derek Brunson and get on top of him, I think Brunson's going to be in a world of trouble. And I really like the top pressure and overall ground game from Kevin Holland.
You look at the finish losses for Derek Brunson, Yoel Romero, Jacare Souza with Strikeforce, Robert Whittaker, Jacare again, Israel Adesanya. I mean, he's been finished time and time again. He's only lost by decision to who? Kendall Grove, way back, Anderson Silva, and that's it. So he has been finished in the past by strikes. That's the worrisome thing with Derek Brunson. For Kevin Holland, you look at some of the losses. He loses to Brendan Allen, he gets submitted. He loses to Thiago Santos by decision, had no business. Lost by decision to Curtis Millender, lost to Rafael Lovato Jr. by submission. The guy went undefeated, and he was a Bellator champ, and he beat Gegard Mousasi by decision. Rafael's good. So you look at the losses for Kevin Holland, maybe you don't love them. I certainly don't love a lot of the losses that are on that record either, but they come with the territory. You look at the wins, Darren Stewart, Buckley, Auntie Veros, yikes. Jacare, he's supposed to fight Jack Hermanson, he got Jacare, so on and so forth. John Phillips, he finishes him. I just worry for Kevin Holland. There's two fights that worry me. He beat Darren Stewart, but it was too close of a fight. It was a split decision win. He definitely lost the third. I gave him rounds one and two. And I talked about that in the Darren Stewart fight against Eric Anders. Listen, Stewart can rally late, and you had to worry about that against Eric Anders until an illegal knee. So in the fight for Holland against Stewart, I worry. I also worry about the fight against Brendan Allen, because he cracked him early, he got on top, he had him bloody, and then he gets submitted and he made a mistake. Now I understand, he's progressed from late 2019 until early 2021, as any young fighter will. Derek Brunson's the type of guy that doesn't go away. I know he's older, but I don't necessarily worry about his cardio.
He does go away, that's all of his losses.
Well, he gets finished, yeah. But, well, not all of his losses, but with Derek Brunson, 100% takedown defense, and he came into the UFC against Chris Leben way back at UFC 155, Dos Santos Velasquez 2, in 2012. He's fought very good fighters. Machida, he beat. He beat Uriah Hall. Like,
that was a nice knockout, too.
He beat Sam Alvey. Like, he's faced a very high level of competition the whole way up. Kevin Holland was our Fighter of the Year last year. It's crazy to see these two guys fight, because, hey, can Derek Brunson end another hype train? Well, Matt,
hashtag one last run, Derek Brunson.
Fight Night Picks in the community tab on YouTube. 1,500 total votes, 80% going with your 10th ranked fighter in Kevin Holland, 20% going with Derek Brunson. If we look at the odds, Brunson actually opened as the favorite at a minus 120. He's a plus 141 underdog now. For Holland, open a plus 100, now at a minus 172. So can Brunson, A, put a pressure on, but not enough where he gets caught? Can he wrestle, but not enough to get caught in some of those slippery submissions that Kevin Holland has? Or can Holland just go out there, stick and move, land a nice, maybe even a power jab that drops Brunson, get on top and hammer away?
Don't think he's going to beat him with a power jab. That's one of the few things I can guarantee. Here's the thing for Derek Brunson. Kevin Holland does one thing, and I'm going to call it the Bobby Green shoulder roll. I know other fighters do it, but he does like to roll a lot, especially when he's in a southpaw position. It leaves his chin open to overhand lefts, which is Derek Brunson's best strike. Just something to watch out for. Little X factor. I still think Kevin Holland should be able to get the win on this. I won't discredit the power Brunson has, and I think if he catches Holland clean, especially on the feet, he will put him down. I just like the accuracy from Holland. I think he can, like I said, get from point A to point B, and the chin of Brunson is somewhat questionable, whereas I've seen Kevin Holland eat big shots and not really react to them. So I like the durability of Holland, and I do think he's going to be a guy who might not get to the title shot. I know he's had a little bit of beef with Adesanya. They've gone back and forth. Maybe he never gets to that point, but I do think he'll be good enough to get past Derek Brunson, and at least we'll see Kevin Holland in there with some other elite guys. Like Kevin Holland versus Darren Till is a fun fight. Versus Marvin Vettori is a fun fight. Jack Hermanson, like, those are the names I would really like to see Kevin Holland fight consistently instead of the Charlie Ontiveroses of the world. So hopefully Kevin Holland, if he is able to get this win, does get one of those big names in the division.
Next. He was supposed to get Mahmoud Muradov and ends up with Charlie Ontiveros. He's supposed to get Jack Hermanson. He waits a little bit, and then he gets Jacare Souza. And now, full camp for Derek Brunson. Can Derek Brunson solve his chin issues? Well, you can't really solve them. That's one of those things that I worry about. So again, yes, I agree. I'm going with Kevin Holland in this fight. Now, here's the X factor. I wouldn't put any of my cheddar on it. I'm going to wait until the first round's over. If Brunson pushes a pace on Holland and keeps him down and he's able to get on top of him in the first round, I'm going Brunson hot and heavy after the first round. Now, I think Holland could obviously finish him round one, round two. I'm interested to see this fight go further because I think the further that it goes, the more it favors Brunson, the older fighter. So I'm going to go with the current favorite in Kevin Holland right now, but this is an awesome fight and Brunson has many ways to win here.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. It's always fun to have Derek Brunson in there with a prospect. I know it's a story that we've seen kind of played out 100 times at this point, but it's always going to be a fun fight no matter what, because Derek Brunson, you hate to say he fights the level of competition, but he does. Like, he was beating Yoel Romero until he wasn't, and he was doing well against Robert Whittaker until he wasn't. So I think this could be a really fun main event this weekend.
Both of us going with Kevin Holland, really looking forward to it. It should be a great card. We're going to have some awesome new content coming out with Fight Night Picks. This week in MMA, the interviews with JHK, all sorts of great stuff on the website as well, fightnightpicks.com, promo code FNP25 to get 25% off your order from the store. You can get some awesome merch over there as well. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks during the week because, of course, as fights are added or canceled, we will have those updates here on the channel. All you have to do, subscribe, toss the like. You can find us, Fight Night Picks, on Instagram, Twitter, at Craig Allen FNP, and at Matt Allen FNP as well. So enjoy Fight Week. Really looking forward to this card, Matt. As we always say with Fight Night Picks,
let's get into it.